Let's begin. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the June 9th, 2022 hybrid meeting of the TRPA hearings officer. This is the first time we've done a in-person and virtual together since the pandemic arrived, and we're going to give it our best shot to make this work for everybody today. Thank you for your patience, and thank you for participating. My name is Andrew Strain. I'll be serving as the hearings officer for today's meetings. We've already done a sound check with Georgina and Josh to make sure that the people listening remotely can hear us and we can hear them. So I think we're ready to proceed. I'll call the meeting to order. Second item on our agenda is the approval of today's agenda. I'll ask the staff if we have any changes to today's agenda. Seeing none, I'll approve the agenda as it's been presented and listed in our public hearing notice. Item three on today's agenda are the public interest comments. Any member of the public who wishes to address the hearings officer on any item that's not listed as an announcement of appeal rights or as a public hearing item on today's agenda or on any other issue may do so at this time. However, public comments on the announcement of appeal rights or on public hearing items will be taken up at the time that those agenda items are heard. Please note that the hearings officer is prohibited by law from taking immediate action on or discussing issues raised by the public that are not listed on this agenda. Since we have a split meeting format, I'm going to start in our meeting room today and look for anyone who wishes to address the hearings officer on any item that's not listed on today's public hearing items. All right, seeing none, Georgina, will you please look for a show of hands for those who are participating remotely?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand raising feature in the Zoom app. The hand icon is located on the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you, and you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. Looks like we have one hand raised. We're going to start with Michael Z.
Yes, Michael, go ahead, please.
Hi, sorry. Is this for the public interest comments in general, or is this for one of the items we're going to get through to? Because I'm ready to speak, but I'm interested in speaking on one of the agenda items.
Then you should wait until we come to that agenda,
Michael. Apologies. This is
items that are not listed on today's public hearings. Notice or as an announcement of appeal rights and general matters really only.
And we have another hand raised, Ingrid Kellett Smith.
Yes, Ms. Smith. Go ahead, please.
Ingrid, you're muted on your device. If you could unmute yourself.
This is an agenda item, so I'll wait until you get to that point.
Very good. Thank you, Ms. Smith. Georgina, any others?
Looks like we have no other hands raised.
Thank you. Let's move on to agenda item number four, which is the announcement of appeal rights. I want to let everyone who's here in person and those who are listening online know that any decision of the hearings officer is appealable to the governing board of the TRPA within 21 days of the hearings officer decision. The application fee and the appeal application can be found on the TRPA's website. Next, we'll move on to agenda item number five, which are the public hearing items. Item 5A is the Wiser Land Capability Challenge, located at 2025 The Back Road in Douglas County, Nevada. That's in Glenbrook. The assessor's parcel number is 1418-11-201-005, and the TRPA file number is LCAP2021-0387. Julie Roll.
Yes, as Andrew mentioned, this is a land capability challenge with a staff recommendation to change the land capability from class 3 to class four with a small portion of class two. So this project was actually reviewed by one of our soil scientists, Marcel Manicki. She's not here today, so I'm just going to cover this on her behalf. And Kevin Agin is the representative for the owner. And I don't see him here in person, but he may be online with us today. I can't see behind me. Thank you. And just want to let you know, we have not received any public comment thus far on this item. And I have a little summary that Marcel prepared for me, so I will just kick it off with that.
Thank you, Julie.
So this is just a summary of what she found during her site visit and her recommendations. The parcel is on the east side of Glenbrook. Two small buildings exist on the lower portion of the parcel. The parcel is relatively uniform in slope and vegetative cover and is situated between the meadow below and a hill slope above. A small ephemeral stream is present just north of the parcel, but the setback is still outside the parcel boundary. The vegetation on this parcel is dominated by Jeffrey pine and white fir forest, with montane shrubs and green leaf manzanita, mountain whitethorn, and antelope bitterbrush in the understory. This parcel was mapped as part alluvial deposits and part steeper colluvial hill slope. The Jibu soil in the JAC map unit developed in glacial outwash material. It has a frangipan at 45 to 52 inches, which is root restrictive and restricts downward water flow. The Umba soils formed in colluvial and residual volcanic soil material and have volcanic bedrock at depths of 20 to 40 inches. Two pits were excavated by Bacco and determined that the soils do not meet the soil characteristics of either of the map soil type. The soil was determined to be higher capability, and based on slope measurements, the majority of the parcel is class four, XXX, and then there's one small area in the northeast corner mapped as class two, where the slopes are around 32%. And that's all I have for now.
Thank you, Julie. And as our staff, are you in agreement with the conclusions reached by Marcel?
Yes, correct.
Thank you. Don't have any further questions of staff, and we have someone with us today who represents the applicant. Any comments?
Yes, if you can you hear me? All right.
Me?
Yes.
Me or Andrew?
This is Kevin Agin representing the Weiser family. And yes, we are very pleased to see that agency staff agreed with our soil scientist findings and totally agree with the conclusions reached and appreciate all the effort to get to this point and encourage approval of this land capability challenge.
Thank you, Kevin. Anything else?
No.
Very good. At this point, I will open the public hearing. I'll start in the room again to see if anyone who's with us today in person would like to offer any public input on the Weiser Land Capability Challenge. Seeing none, I will ask Georgina to look for a show of hands for those who are participating remotely. Georgina?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand raising feature in the Zoom app. The hand icon is located at the bottom of your Zoom screen or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you and you'll have 3 minutes. We're going to start with Ann Anderson.
Yes, Ms. Anderson.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I am one of the owners of the property next door just to the south. And I just have a question about what it means to change the capability of the soil. What is that? What is the effect of that?
This is Julie Roll. So the land capability is directly correlated with a percent of allowed coverage. So for example, a class three parcel would be allowed 5% coverage, while a class 4 would be 20% and a class 6 would be 30%. So this doesn't take into account anything, any coverage that's already there that's been verified as existing. So we're not really looking at the coverage per se, but that is the ultimate kind of effect of the change in land capability.
Thank you. And I just have one follow-up question. Is that okay?
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Anderson.
Thank you. I noticed that in the staff report that the test holes, one of them was kind of where the current buildings are and another was farther up the hill. And so I was wondering if that means that the applicant might want to or be able to build back there?
The test pits don't necessarily mean that. They're just chosen at locations to represent different parts of the parcel, just to look for potential changes from one part of the parcel to another. So it doesn't really have anything to do with potential development. It's just trying to look at a broad area within the parcel. So we haven't received any formal applications or anything with what the owners are proposing to do at this time. So it's really unknown.
Okay, thank you. That answers my questions. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Julie, and thank you, Ms. Anderson. Oh, Georgina, anyone else?
Just looking for a show of hands. And it looks like we have no other hands raised, so we can continue with the review of the item.
Thank you, Georgina. At this point, I'll close the public hearing, seeing as we have no additional public comment to be offered. Based on the information that's contained in our staff report, including the technical soil study that has been attached to it, prepared by the applicant's consultant, review by our soils scientist on contract, and the determination and rationale that she reached, as well as the TRPA staff conclusion on those documents and reports, I will approve the Wiser Land Capability Challenge as it has been proposed. Let's move on now to item 5B, the Beaver Street Linear Public Facilities, a grading and paving project located on Beaver Street north of Speckled Avenue in Kings Beach, California. The assessor's parcel number is 530-101-00, and the TRPA file number is ERSP2021-0297. Teresa Avance is our staff planner. I'll ask her to begin with presenting the summary of the project. Teresa?
Thank you, Drew. This is Teresa Avance, senior planner with...
Foster.
Again, hi, this is Teresa Avance, senior planner, current planning at TRPA. The proposed project is to improve a 140 linear foot section of Beaver Street, north of Speckled Avenue in Kings Beach. The existing conditions of this roadway, there is a existing dirt road cut for Forest Service access from previous years. And the paving of this portion of Beaver Street will allow for development of 3 buildable parcels on the section north of Speckled Avenue. There will be relocation of 1,380 square feet of existing coverage, soft coverage, from a portion of Speckled Avenue to this portion of Beaver Street. Speckled Avenue section will be revegetated and blocked off with a chain and post fence to prevent access to the general vehicles, but still allow for public utility access in that area. This portion of Beaver Avenue is not visible from Lake Tahoe or Highway 28 or any other scenic corridor, and we have not received any public comment on this item at this time.
Thank you, Teresa. And can you remind us for the record, please, who is the applicant on this project?
Yes, the applicant is Placer County. It is a Placer County
roadway. The project, however, will be maintained by the entities that are receiving the benefit.
And is this, Teresa, a portion of a public right-of-way?
It is a public right-of-way, yes.
Thank you. I don't have any further questions for the staff. Do we have anyone representing the applicant, either in person today or online? Doesn't sound like we do, so I'll go ahead.
Hello. Now and open. Can you hear me there? Sorry. This is Andrew Ryan representing the applicant.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ryan.
Good afternoon, everyone. Just wanted to thank staff for their effort on this project. And we've all been working on this for about a year to allow access to original lots that were created in the 1926 subdivision. They're legally created lots that are part of a non or accessed via this non-maintained public right-of-way. And we look forward to the outcome of today's hearing. And I'm available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. I don't have any further questions at this time for you. I'll go ahead and open the public hearing. And first, I'll look for anyone who's with us today in person who'd like to offer public comment on item 5B. Seeing none, I'll ask Georgina to look for a show of hands for anyone who would like to offer public comment participating remotely today. Georgina?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature in the Zoom app or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you and you'll have 3 minutes. It looks like we have no hands raised. We can continue with the review of this item.
Thank you, Georgina. And Teresa, to confirm, you received no written public comment?
I have had no comment.
Thank you. Since we have no additional public comment to be offered on this item, I will close the public hearing and take action on the project. Based on the staff's analysis and the information that's been presented in our staff report that includes the findings as made for Chapter 4, Chapter 21, Chapter 30, and that includes the FONSI, the finding of no significant effect, I will approve the findings as they have been presented. And secondly, based on the same information that is in our report, including the conditions that are listed in the draft permit for this project, I will approve the permit for the project as it has been written. Let's move on to item 5C, the Yi Tahoe LLC Shoreline Protective Structure Reconstruction. Located at 3276 Edgewater Drive, Dollar Point in Placer County, California. The assessor's parcel number is APN 093-094-005. And the TRPA file number is ERSP 2021-0791. Paul Nielsen is handling this for the TRPA. Paul?
Yeah, thank you, Andrew. This item is for shoreline protective structure up on the North Shore. It's in the area where we see, some pretty steep, backshore areas. In this case, you've got a steep slope, probably 15 to 20 feet. It's comprised of volcanic, sort of unconsolidated material. Historically, we've determined that the existing revetment was built with rock, cement. It has deteriorated over time, and it is static. So the revetment that exists today does and has provided protection, but it is failing in a couple locations. And that's primarily due to the age and the fact that it is a static revetment, which means it's solid. It doesn't move like the revetments you've seen before you in the past, which include a dynamic component, which are rocks of various sizes placed at the toe of the slope that are designed to move, to mimic the natural environment when wave energy approaches and hits the shoreline, when you have rocks, you know, they absorb the energy, they move around, and they help protect the shoreline. And so the TRPA design guidelines, the standards require these revetments to be designed in that dynamic way. You can see in the pictures in the packet that the toe of the slope during a site visit, the very toe of the slope was unstable and included a number of void spaces actually behind the revetment. You could stick your hand in there and see where the erosion over time has undermined the base of that revetment. The other unstable part are the stairs that come down from the house. And it's just an old stairway. It's steep. It's dangerous. I could barely walk down it. And so that'll be rebuilt as a part of this project. It'll be more of a meandering pathway, so it's not as steep. And other than that, there are no changes in staff summary and no public comment received.
Thank you, Paul. Do we know the approximate age of this structure?
I do not, but the engineer is on with us. I would suggest it's probably at least 30 years old, but he probably knows better.
Thank you, Paul.
This is John Pease masquerading as Abigail Edwards. I'm the civil engineer for the project. As far as I know, most of these improvements were made somewhere in the range of 1967, not too long after the subdivision was built. And you can see that they were built when the beach was about 2 to 3 feet higher. The staircase probably obviously has been renewed once since then, but it's the bottom end of it's hanging in the air because the footings have been washed out and they were in the lake. So that's my best guess at age on it.
Jonathan, any other comments?
No, I appreciate you guys taking the time to look at this today and see if we have any other issues or problems, but hopefully this will proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. And can you summarize for us briefly, Paul mentioned the difference between the solid wall or the solid structures of probably what we knew to be the best practice decades ago and our newer thinking about the dynamic revetment design concept. Can you talk a little bit, Jonathan, about how this proposed design meets that newer concept?
Sure. And I guess that typically when I prepare these things, I consider them as a semi-dynamic revetment, which isn't really anybody but myself uses that term. But we want to have the small particles which adjust and move and take the wave energy. But if they're too small or too light, then they'll be washed away and there's a shortage of sediment on the shoreline, as evidenced by the erosion. So it's basically a combination of existing boulders, proposed new boulders, and then wedged in between the boulders, we want to have material that's in the mobile range. So it's basically trying to provide both a semi-static and a dynamic component together so that it doesn't wash away in its entirety. So most of our dynamic rocks are probably in the 3 to 6 inch range, which you don't really think of as moving down the shoreline and probably don't much. They will move in and out over the years. So that's maybe my adjustment onto the thought process, but you know, the really dynamic material is the sand coming from the beach half a mile to the west, and that is ephemeral, and there's not enough of it. So we've tried to make some of each, so some of it's sort of a rockery wall, and some of it's a dynamic revetment, and we're trying to rebuild the stairs so that they don't impinge into the lake here.
Thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate that explanation. At this point, I'll open the public hearing and ask those who are in the room with us today if there's anyone here who'd like to offer comment on item 5C. Seeing none, I'll ask Georgina to look for a show of hands to see if anyone who's participating virtually would like to offer comment on this agenda item. Georgina?
Any members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer on this item may do so at this time by utilizing the hand raising feature in the Zoom app or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. Just looking for a show of hands. And it looks like we have no hands raised, so we can continue with the review of this item.
Thank you, Georgina. Seeing as we have no additional public comment to be offered on this item, I will close the public hearing and take action on the project. Based on the information that's included in our staff report, including the proposed findings and the rationale on which they are based, and these do include findings for Chapter 4, Paul, correct?
Yep.
Chapter 4, Chapter 30, Chapters 21 and Chapter 81, and embedded within that is a section from Chapter 80 that Paul and I reviewed previously this week, as well as the findings in Chapter 80, Chapter 84, and Chapter 85. Based on the rationale on which those findings are based, I will approve or make those findings that are proposed by the staff, and that includes the finding of no significant effect, the FONSI. Secondly, I will approve the project based on the staff summary and subject to the conditions that are contained in the draft permit. Let's move on now to item 5D, the Serprenant single family dwelling addition and modification located at 699 Carson Court, Incline Village, Nevada. That's in Washoe County. The assessor's parcel number is 125-37309, and the TRPA file number is ERSP 2021-0385. Bridget Cornell is our staff planner for this item. Bridget, can you please introduce it and give us a summary of the proposal?
Sure. Before I begin, I do see that there is a hand raised. And I don't know if it, I see a hand raised from Abby. I don't know if it was from before. I'm not sure if it was related to the last project or not.
Hey, Michael.
Hi, Bridget.
Hi.
My hand was raised. For some reason, Jonathan was under my name on the hearing. So I just had a couple comments. I was just answering Andrew's question about when the stairs were constructed.
Okay, bye.
On when the stairs were constructed and the house was constructed in 1963. And I just wanted to also say I was a land use planner on that project and I had no comments, but thank you for approving.
Sorry. Thank you, Bridget, and thank you, Abby.
Yeah, just wanted to make sure we weren't missing something there. So
thank you, Bridget.
I have it on a screen where I can see raised hands too. So, okay, moving on to agenda item 5B. Thank you, Andrew. Again, Bridget Cornell, and I'm a planner in the current planning department. Again, this is TRP file number ERSP 2021-0385. The proposed project is a single family dwelling addition. The applicants are proposing to add a garage to an existing single family dwelling structure, as well as add some additional living space. It is coming before the hearings officer today because it is located in Incline Village Regulatory Zone number 5, or Incline Village number 5 Regulatory Zone, where all residential projects are considered special use because of the area's potential for avalanche risk. So we have noticed the adjacent property owners and the recording of a hold harmless deed restriction will be required upon acknowledgement of the project. So it's pretty straightforward. I do have some changes. Georgina, I don't know if you got that email that I emailed just before the meeting.
I did not.
Okay. Just kind of reviewing the project again leading up to the meeting, I realized that there was a typo in the permit, as well as we've incorporated a couple of additional items into the permit and the findings. So if I could, in the draft permit in item number or special condition number one, it's just the project description that it makes reference to a 32-foot tree. And that reference should be to a 32-inch diameter rest height or DBH tree. And that is an important distinction, just the size of the tree, because there is an additional finding that needs to be made related to the removal of the size of that tree. So the first change physical change to the permit will be a change to that special condition. Again, just correcting the reference to being a 32-inch diameter breast height tree. An additional condition that will also be added, well, to back up a little bit, the site plan showing the proposed project, the version that is in the staff summary shows that part of the development crosses over into the open space easement on this parcel, as well as crosses into the rear setback. I have talked to the applicant and they have provided documentation that the open space easement in this area has been amended. So both the existing structure as well as the proposed addition will be located outside of the open space easement. So in addition to that, again, part of the existing structure is in the rear setback. The project was initially redesigned to not have the addition in the rear setback. So that was redesigned between the applicant and Placer County, Washoe County months ago. So I am proposing to add an additional condition to the permit. This condition will be added to special condition 3A, and it will be added as number 7. I will read the proposed language for this added condition. It says the proposed plan show development in the rear setback and in the open space easement, as well as a fence in the public right of way. Applicant has provided evidence that the open space easement has been amended. Please update the site plan to show revised open space easement. Please provide evidence that Washoe County accepts that the development can remain in the rear setback. If the fence will be removed or realigned, please update the site plan accordingly. That's the end of the new condition. So essentially, we are looking for some evidence from Washoe County that they accept the current design, and the applicant, I've already run this by the applicant, and they are amenable to that. In addition, as I mentioned, there is a 32-inch tree proposed for removal. According to the TRPA Code of Ordinances in Chapter 61, this is considered an old growth tree, and there are provisions in the code that protect these old growth trees. There is one section of the code includes a statement that requires some findings be made, and the finding is within non-SEZ urban areas, individual trees that are larger than 30 inches DBH that are healthy and structurally sound shall be retained as desirable specimen trees having aesthetic and wildlife value unless no reasonable alternative exists to retain the tree, including the reduction of parking areas or modification of the original project design. So that is the statement within the code. I am adding an additional rationalization for that finding, just stating that the location of the one 32-inch tree that is proposed for removal is near the existing structure and is in the logical location for the garage addition. Given the constraints of the property, especially now with the revised open space easement, there's no alternative for where this garage could be located. So I would like to add that finding, the Chapter 61 finding, to the staff summary and include that in the findings to be made. So those are the changes to the project. I do see that the applicant, Leandra Soprenet, is available here if there are any questions. The affected or adjacent property owners have been notified, and I did not receive any comments back on this project. So today we are asking that the findings be made, including, again, that the Chapter 61 finding that was added, and that a finding of no significant effect be made. And then we would like to have the project itself approved based on the draft permit that is contained in the staff summary, in addition to the correction that I made and the added condition.
Thank you, Bridget.
Sure.
And to clarify that the setback and the open space easement, those are local government issues and not TRPA issues?
That is correct. The open space easement is a provision that is part of Washoe County, and it is bureaucratic. It is not a part of the TRPA review, but the site plan just visually shows that this structure was crossing into it. But as I mentioned, the applicant has provided evidence to me of the recorded changes to the open space easement. And yes, the rear setback in this case is up against the Mount Rose Highway right-of-way, which is, you know, either state or I don't know if there's a portion of that that also affects the county.
Very good. Thank you, Bridget. We have someone on the line who's representing the applicant or the applicant themselves who has input or comment.
Hi, this is Leandra Soprenant. I am the applicant. Thank you so much for having me today. And thank you so much to the staff for all of their hard work, especially Bridget. Thank you. I do want to make one comment about the 32-inch breast height tree. We did have a permit for tree removal through TRPA, and we did have someone come out and mark that tree because it is dying. So that is available for me to, I'm able to send the findings to Bridget if that's how she'd like to handle that. But other than that, no other comments. And I look forward to the outcome in our favor. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Prennan. Yes, there ought to be a way we could cross-reference if that was a TRPA marking. Bridget, do you know how we can just add that to the project record, or maybe it's already in there electronically?
Yes, we can. So there is also a condition in the permit addressing that, not just addressing the finding, but there was a condition in the permit to have the applicant provide additional rationalization for the removal of that that tree. So that would meet that this condition, special condition 3D. So by providing evidence that it has already been marked for removal because it's an unhealthy tree would meet that special condition.
If it truly is unhealthy.
Thank you, Bridget. At this point, I'll open the public hearing and ask if there's anyone in the room today who would like to offer comment on this item 5D. Seeing none, I'll ask Georgina to look for a show of hands for those who are participating remotely if anyone would like to offer comment. Georgina?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer on this item may do so at this time by utilizing the hand-raising feature in the Zoom app or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you. And it looks like we have no hands raised for this item, so we can continue with the agenda.
Thank you, Georgina. Seeing as we have no public comment to be offered on this item, I will close the public hearing and take action on the project. Based on the information that's contained in our staff report, including the required findings as proposed and the rationale on which they are based, and I will point out, as Bridget has mentioned, we will add the finding from Chapter 61 for old growth tree removal and its rationale to our staff report and to this action. And this includes the finding of no significant effect to FONSI. I will approve the findings as necessary, as amended, as we've discussed. Secondly, the conditions in the draft permit, including the clarification in condition number one of a 32-inch DBH tree in the project description, and a new condition 3A7. Is that right, Bridget?
That is correct.
The new condition of 3A7, I will approve the project based on the draft permit and the draft conditions that are proposed in it.
Thank you.
Let's move on to item 5E, the Bukala demolition of a historic resource single family dwelling and the construction of a new single family dwelling located at 8305 Meeks Bay Avenue in Meeks Bay, California, El Dorado County. The assessor's parcel number is 016-063-001. and the TRPA file number is ERSP 2021-1500. We have a couple of staff working on this. Our lead staff person for it, and I'll explain that in just a minute. Our lead staff person is Brandy McMahon from the staff, and then there has been a contract let to Wells Barnett Planning, WBA Planning. Lynn Barnett represents that contractor, and the contractor actually did the analysis and the review, is my understanding. Brandy, can you please lead off?
Okay, thank you. Great, thank you. Do you want me to move over there?
On a Zoom, let me call it.
Great, thank you. My name is Brandy McMahon. I'm the local government coordinator with the Tahoe Regional Planning Agency. I am the TRPA staff planner assigned to this project. With me today is Lynn Barnett, who reviewed the project on behalf of TRPA. And then Marlon, could you say your last name for me?
Charnot.
Marlon Charnot, also with Wells Barnett Associates. So this is an application that was submitted by Robert Bucola. He is proposing to demolish an existing single-family dwelling and replace it with a new single-family dwelling at 8305 Meeks Bay Avenue in Meeks Bay, California. This is a lakefront property. The existing residence, it was built in 1932 and has been determined to be a historic resource and therefore is subject to the historic resource protection provisions in Chapter 16 of the TRPA code. As mitigation for the removal of the historic resource, the applicant had a registered historian prepare a historic resources inventory and evaluation report. The report was prepared for both 8305 and 8307 Meeks Bay Avenue. That's the adjacent property. TRPA staff, we sent that report to the California State Historic Preservation Office and requested comments regarding the adequacy of the report, but we did not receive any comments from that office. The report documents and evaluates all the historical features, structures, and sites within the project area and will ensure that the historic integrity and significance of the resource is adequately documented. I'd like to point out that an application to demolish the existing residence and accessory structures on the adjacent property, that's 8307 Meeks Bay Avenue, and the application as well included a proposal to construct a new residence, was submitted to TRPA and withdrawn. Also, a lot line adjustment between the two properties was submitted to TRPA and was withdrawn. There are five public comment letters attached to the staff report, and since the staff report has been prepared, we received 60 additional public comment letters, including one from Friends of the West Shore and one from the Meeks Bay Vista Property Owners Association. The rest are primarily from neighboring property owners. I did receive one public comment letter just around 20 minutes ago, and I printed out a copy and I handed it to the hearings officer. All of the other letters I received by email, I did forward to the hearings officer for his review and consideration. At this time, Lynn Barnett is going to go over the main issues raised in the public comment letters. He's going to summarize those for us. And then he also has a proposed or recommended change to the site plan. He's regarding the driveway, the existing driveway and the slope. And then after Lynn presents his comments, Nick Exline, who's representing Mr. Robert Bucola, he is planning on providing a presentation and going over the historical features on the site that are proposed to be retained. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Brandy. I have no questions at this time other than one. And feel free, Lynn or Marlon or Brandy, whoever's best suited to answer the question. In the project description and background, it lists a three-car garage being included as part of the project description, and I thought I counted four when I looked at the plans and the floor plans, the site plans, and the elevation drawings for that. Can you clarify that, please?
It is indeed four.
Go ahead, Lynn.
Thank you. That's one clarification. One nice thing about having so many comments and so many people reviewing this is that you find things in your staff summary that you missed. There's another correction that we want to make in the permit itself. It references the wrong address for the site in one of the permit conditions, and that would be condition 3B, one in parens. The correct address in that condition should be 8305 Meeks Bay Avenue. And then we, as Brandy just mentioned, we want to have a want to review the kind of summary of the comments that we received. We received well over 100 pages of comments, most of them received in the last day or two. So been a challenge to digest them and summarize them. But there's some common themes in here. So we've kind of listed 21, and even these themes overlap. So these are kind of high-level comments. I'll try to go through these quickly. But the first comment that was, and again, these comments were not in every single letter. So they, and we cataloged them all so we can tell who had which comments. But one common comment was that public access and traffic is a concern. The narrow road to Meeks Bay Avenue has very little parking. In the winter months, the road's inaccessible and creates hazardous situation for emergency vehicles. So we've addressed that in the permit conditions. We're adding a condition, writing a condition. Pull that one up. No, the parking. It's in the staff report, I think, isn't it? Yeah, we added a condition in the staff report. Sorry.
Oh, it's already.
It's in the staff report. So it's condition, excuse me while I.
Yeah, I don't know what you're doing.
Conditions for no parking in the right way. Well, Marlon's looking up the condition. We do have a condition that prohibits public parking in the right-of-way. We want to make sure that there is no construction traffic or parking in that right-of-way. So it is condition six. All construction and service vehicles necessary for this project shall be parked on existing on-site or off-site land coverage only. Off-site parking on private property is permissible with the owner's permission. Evidence of permission shall be provided to TRPA. All parking in the public right-of-way is prohibited. Another issue, parking is limited and concern where people will park. Off-street parking is very limited. That's a cousin of the condition of the comment we had before in same condition. People are concerned about the size of the single-family dwelling. I think there's been a lot of confusion based on the application for the project at 8307, exactly what is being reviewed and approved here. So we only reviewed the single-family dwelling at 8305 Meeks Bay Avenue. There may or may not be a project on the adjacent property that was not reviewed as part of this project. And I'll let the applicant's representative address that if needed later on. Fourth was people are concerned about the removal of historic structure in replacement with a large structure that's out of character with the neighborhood. The new structure here is larger than what was there. But again, I think there's some confusion as to what's being torn down and rebuilt. The large house that was submitted at 8307 is not part of this project. Related to that, people are concerned about piecemealing.
and why the project's not being considered in its entirety. What they're requesting is 8305 and 8307 be reviewed together. Had the application not been reviewed, I think that's a real possibility, but the application for the house at 8307 was withdrawn, so we had nothing to review. Sixth condition was visual impacts. Meeks Bay Avenue is not a scenic highway. It's not visible from Highway 89. It is visible from Lake Tahoe, and there was a scenic shoreline assessment that was done on the project, and conditions are in the permit having to do with scenic quality. A seventh concern was that the permits, concern about permits that are within El Dorado County creating a vacation rental and the impacts on the neighborhood. This could very well be a vacation rental. El Dorado County does allow vacation rentals. TRPA has deferred vacation rentals in the county to the county itself. It's not a TRPA review item. Number eight, people were concerned that the construction impact, about construction and the impacts on the very small street. And again, we dealt with that in the conditions. There have been other constructions projects on the street in years past. So I think from experience, they've had some problems out there. This project will not be like some other past construction sites where contractors had no other parking but on the right of way. There is parking here. Some people had general concerns about noise and light pollution. The lights on the property, exterior lights have to be in conformance with TRPA lighting standards. And noise, I think, relates to the possibility that this is a vacation rental or something. So noise typically is one of those, for a single family home, this would be a nuisance issue that would be handled by the county. Some folks brought up concerns about allowable coverage. We've gone through the coverage. It's low capability, and they're not increasing coverage. In fact, they're reducing coverage on the site and banking it. So that bank coverage could be reused again in the future. And I want to talk a little bit about coverage and related to the driveway before I'm done. Another concern was commercial VHR nature in a residential area. TRPA, this building is a single family residence. VHRs, if approved by the county or authorized by the county, are not considered commercial by TRPA. Some people were concerned the property is not being deed restricted to prohibit VHRs. Again, same comment, same response. General concerns about the environment. I can just assure you this project met all the TRPA design standards and the TRPA code of ordinances. There's a concern that this development may impact future generations. I'm not sure how to address that directly. I think all projects have impacts on, future generations will be inheriting projects. I have a feeling that this comment relates again to the potential VHR the house that was withdrawn on 8307. Related to that, some people felt that there was an invasion of well-being in the neighborhood and the families who live there. Again, I think that is more related to the adjacent project that was withdrawn. General concern, the project does not conform to TRPA rules and regulations. We did a thorough review, we believe, and we disagree with that. There was mention of a 1947 deed restriction on the property not being applied. Being that was 1947, TRPA would not be a party to that deed restriction. And I would encourage any parties that are a party to that to look into enforcement, but that's not a TRPA issue. There was concern about the accuracy of the plotted map. This site was surveyed. Susie Yanagi was the architect. We've had good luck with her, doing good work. I think the was nonspecific, but I think we were satisfied going out to the site, and there was a site assessment done on this prior before where TRPA had verified coverage. So we're fairly certain that the accuracy meets TRPA requirements. There were concerns about reduced property values in the general neighborhood. That's not something TRPA generally reviews and looks at. And whether or not that's true, I can't speak to it. There were some folks that addressed the adequacy of the historic report. The TRP staff has reviewed the historic report. It was mentioned that the report went to SHPO, Cal SHPO. They didn't provide any comments, but the in-house TRPA historian felt that the report was adequate and met the requirements of the TRPA code. Some people, lastly, this is the 21st theme, requested a ban on outdoor speakers and enforceable quiet hours. That is not something that TRPA typically requires on a single family house. That's related more to like a VHR. That would be a nuisance issue handled by the county and local law enforcement. So again, we went through very quickly and digested lots of comments. We stand by our staff recommendations. Now, one thing that was pointed out also was that the driveway may not conform to TRP standards. So we relooked at the driveway. There is a section of driveway that is currently around 17% slope. A 17% slope driveway is not permissible by the TRP code, but it's existing. It's been TRP's practice not to require or not to tear out nonconforming driveways. So for example, if I had a house with a nonconforming driveway, I'm doing a deck addition, the TRPA would not hold up the project because of my nonconformity. For this project, however, they were proposing to widen that driveway a little bit, I think, and probably partially in response to the neighborhood concerns that the access was narrow. You feel that additional widening has to conform to the TRPA code, which limits slope at 15%. So we have a 2% slope differential that's over the allowable. If it's the hearings officer's desire to not approve that widening, because a portion of it is also over 15%, we have a permit condition and a finding that we can add to the staff summary and the permit. The condition requires that they also widen the driveway. If they can't widen it here, the driveway becomes too narrow because of the way the driveway layout is. And I've got a site plan I can lay out if you'd like to see it. But it would necessitate keeping some of the existing coverage that's already in a driveway on a part of the parcel, not removing it so they can maintain their 10-foot driveway width. So we can accommodate the driveway if you want to not approve the 17% strip to widen it with this condition. If you feel that the existing driveway, because it's nonconforming, and if you want to allow the strip to go in, then the condition isn't necessary. So, and I can show you on a plan where this is, if that helps you. It's kind of hard to visualize some of this. So
I'd like, while you're summarizing, Lynn, I'd like Georgina to see if she could pull up the existing site plan that's in our packet. She have?
She has it. This is something that, this is a late hit, you know, that came in.
Late edition.
We looked at it. So Marlon and I, before we came over to the meeting, took out our crayons and we drew how this should be. So we have it, and I can show you, and we can take a picture of it if we need to get it in the record. But I have some hand drawn. Do you have those plans?
Thank you.
Can you, Georgina, pull it up over here on at least this screen? Can you go to that screen and point out the trying to follow along as closely as I can?
I get it. What you said right here.
Go ahead, Lynn. Why don't you use that and I'll follow along here.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, no.
Is that the proposed site plan?
Yes. It's an overlay of existing and proposed. So, so here's the existing driveway. It's shared across the property line. There's a section in here.
Excuse me, this is John Marshall. Lynn, we can't hear you.
No.
So either you need to move a mic with you or need to speak from the mic.
Thank you, John. I'll try to move this mic closer. Can you hear me now?
Talk loudly.
I'll speak loud. Thank you. Okay, and I'm pointing to the screen, and Andrew has a paper plan in front of him. Here, this gray area is the existing driveway that's going to remain. What you see in the double hatched area here is driveway that's being removed. And what you see in the single hatched area is the additional width that they're proposing. And some of that driveway area there is over 17, it's over 15% slope. So again, the driveway itself is already over 17. If it's the hearings officer's desire not to approve a widening of the 17% driveway, and this has to come out, and this narrows the driveway in this location, Andrew, so it's no longer 10 feet wide. So our condition requires them to, you see this area here on the south property line that they were going to remove coverage? They would have to maintain some of that coverage to keep a 10-foot width driveway. It's as simple as that. So two things. One is this extra width does provide additional circulation in the neighborhood. One of the concerns is the driveway is too narrow, the access is too narrow. But then we have the opposing driveway width, or I'm sorry, driveway slope requirement that is part of the TRPA code. So we've written the finding and a condition that deals with this if, in fact, you agree that the section of driveway over 15% is not approvable. We're prepared to present that today.
Lynn, how wide is the existing driveway?
It's over 10 feet.
Is it over 12 feet?
It varies in width, but coming into the site, I would say about 12 feet or so. Yeah.
And point out on the site plan, please, where the garage access points are. Where are the garage doors?
Yeah, they're right in here. So you'd come into the driveway and make a hard left. So TRPA had a requirement in the code before 2012 that the driveways had to be as wide as the depth from the garage had to be as wide as the garage doors were, 15 feet back. That was removed from the 2012 code and deferred to local parking regulations. So if this was reviewed 11 years ago or 12 years ago, they would have a problem with the design of the driveway. This is now an El Dorado County design issue.
Will this be subject to El Dorado County review and action?
The county will have to issue building permits on this, and they'll review the project according to their own standards.
Will there be a planning review by El Dorado County, or would that be incorporated within the building permit application review?
My understanding, and I'm not an El Dorado County planner, of course, but my understanding is those projects are circulated to all the departments. The building department is in communication with other departments.
So if I'm pulling into the garages that are on the upper structure, there are three doors there that I thought I saw on the elevation drawings. How do I get out?
You back out and make a turn. It's a 3-point turn.
And if I'm pulling into the fourth garage that is in this lower building, how do I get out?
Marlon understands, knows the site plan better.
For the second garage, which is a one-car garage, you would just pull straight into it
and you'd have to pull back out of that garage and turn around in the driveway somewhere.
Doesn't look ideal, but it probably could work.
Design.
And last question, Lynn, and then we'll ask Mr. Exline to give his remarks, unless you have anything else. Is Meeks Bay Avenue a public right-of-way?
It is a public right-of-way, and as we mentioned in the staff report, there was an inconsistency between the surveyed boundaries, the shape of the boundary, and the right-of-way boundary that the assessor's office had mapped. So originally, when we discovered that, we thought that there was a survey error. We spent a good deal of time with the county assessor's office, and they spent time with other departments. And they came back to us and said that the survey is actually correct. Their maps were incorrect. But yes, Meeks Bay Avenue is a public right-of-way.
And where was that discrepancy, Lynn, on the parcel?
It was in the western corner of the property here. It had a different shape to the property in the assessor's maps.
Thank you. Anything else?
Nope. If you'd like me to read in the condition and the finding, we're prepared to do that when you're ready.
Very good. Hold on to that thought. Mr. Exline, you're up.
I had a PowerPoint that I was going to. I don't know. Okay. How do you change slides up here? I'll just give you kind of like a point. All right. I'm going to have to work on something. Thank you so much. So good afternoon, hearings officer, Mr. Schrein, TRPA staff, Wells Barnett and Associates, and everyone in attendance. For the record, my name is Nick Exline for Exline and Company. I reviewed this project on behalf of, and the planning consultant on behalf of Mr. Bacola, and would really want to, you know, take you through this project and add a few things in addition to what Mr. Barnett provided. So, just to really give a quick overview of the project, kind of the outline of the permitting process and some of the things we engaged in through this the submittal of this application. As was mentioned in a lot of the comment letters, the project was applications were originally submitted for 8305 and 8307 with a concurrent lot line adjustment. You know, many of the letters had talked about, you know, the withdrawal of 8307, kind of the piecemeal approach and, you know, kind of the rationale behind it. I can't express to you enough, there was no kind of ill intent with the way that was kind of submitted and then withdrawn. Really what took place was we submitted concurrently to TRPA and El Dorado County for a lot line adjustment. And due to restrictions in which the El Dorado County permits lot line adjustments, we had to complete 8305 before we could move forward with any other application. And so it was, you know, fundamentally a function of just kind of regulatory constraints placed upon us as an applicant, with no ill intent whatsoever towards the community or representing what we were looking to do with the project. You know, that being said, I think what's also important to, you know, reference within the, you know, kind of piecemeal discussion is obviously kind of, you know, the basic environmental review criteria and how these things are looked at. And from my understanding, and granted, I'm not, of course, a land use attorney, that, you know, single family residences are exempt from CEQA. So, you know, as far as I understand it, kind of the piecemeal approach from a CEQA standard does not really come into play with this particular project. You know, a few other things I just would want to mention at the onset before I get into kind of the historic elements, which I think are the most exciting, at least for, you know, some of the things we're pushing forward, is in regard to kind of vacation home rentals or whatever the official name is in El Dorado County. And I think, you know, like many of you within the audience and in listening that live in Tahoe or surrounding areas, you know, vacation rentals is something that, you know, local jurisdictions are constantly dealing with. And, you know, as Mr. Barnett spoke to, TRPA has routinely, you know, kind of placed that to the local jurisdiction. And so El Dorado County is in the midst of a supervisor election in which VHRs and, you know, how those are governed is being discussed and hotly debated. And I think, you know, looking to kind of provide that background to some in attendance, if they're looking to where they could voice some of their concerns about VHRs and how those things are going to be regulated in the future in El Dorado County. You know, another point I would like to raise, there was a comment within one of the letters, and I actually provided Mr. Barnett with a letter to address this. It was in reference to the easements and setbacks shown on the attached site plan, and specifically how the application was initialed or lack thereof initial on the application. You know, typically for, you know, project development, I would say this is, you know, kind of standard. Is, you know, we work with a surveyor in this particular instance, Loomis and Associates, and I speak incredibly highly of Loomis and Associates. I would argue they're the premier surveying team on the South Shore, and we work in routine with them. We provide them documentation. They have their record data search and do a detailed analysis to represent all legal easements or encumbrances within a site plan. So, you know, as a planner, planning consultant, to be quite honest, we're completely reliant on them to represent those things in accordance with kind of our own title research and those various other elements. And so speaking with, you know, kind of the licensed surveying team with Luminous and Associates yesterday, they were very confident in kind of the accurate legal representation of, you know, all kind of encumbrances to the site, including setbacks. I would also note that they did, of course, give the caveat, you know, similar to myself, that they're not land use attorneys, but in their experience and to their expertise, this is how it would be represented with everything on site. The other element in regard to driveway slope, you know, at some level, as Mr. Barnett pointed out, we're kind of, you know, between a rock and a hard place, if you will, because there's the desire to widen the driveway meets kind of this slope requirement. However, you know, looking at the different design options, we would, of course, work to satisfy that requirement with whatever is deemed appropriate by the hearings officer and, of course, TRP staff. And so, you know, with that, again, this project is looking for 8305 solely. And, you know, with that, I would like to talk a few of those project elements and specifically, you know, kind of how we're dealing with historic. One other item, I guess, is we continue to move forward. I just would, and again, Mr. Barnett pointed this out, so I hate to be redundant, is that this project is compliant with all TRPA requirements. No variances are being sought by the county, no issues with, you know, coverage, height, scenic, massing, the installation of BMPs, where currently BMPs do not exist. And so it really provides an opportunity to, you know, through this thorough review and all the comments that, you know, we had received to vet this project to ensure that it, you know, ticks all the boxes as represented here as it relates to TRPA compliance. One of the really exciting elements of this project, and many of the letters have cited it, and I think, you know, Wells Barnett staff and I have discussed it when we were on site, is, you know, the great kind of stonework that exists, you know, particularly around the shoreline of this area. As was referenced, this project had undergone a historic resource report. And through that report, it was determined that the historical elements of the site were in fact, the rockery work around the shoreline were the historical items to be kept. And so as we, you know, we're uncovering that report meets, you know, considering the design solutions with the property owner, what was really important was maintaining all that historic shore zone work, rockery work. And so that was a front end consideration, I would say, maintaining the historic elements of the site, in addition to kind of the existing boulder outcroppings. I actually dubbed the property owner the Boulder Lorax through his efforts to save boulders and build the structure in accord with them, how they exist on the site. And so what we wanted to do in conversations, again, with Wells Barnett staff was, you know, working through TRP applications and historical processes in the past, we were getting feedback that, hey, we want to see a little bit more than, you know, maybe just some photos, a report, and that kind of gets shelved somewhere. What can you do as far as keeping things on site, reusing these things? You know, what's really possible with this particular project? And so in addition to keeping the historical elements, and I really have to kind of reiterate this point, that is solely the historical item of note. Mr. Armamino, who works with me, has the direct quote we can provide from the historical consultant, but those were her conclusions. In addition to that, there was also some notations and discussion regarding some windows, beams, and other elements of the structures that would be removed, mm-hmm. and, you know, kind of the unique nature of those. And the project architect is based out of Sacramento, or excuse me, project contractor is based out of Sacramento. And in conversations with him, he does a lot of, you know, kind of urban projects, you know, unique project with a, you know, strong artistic feel where, you know, incorporating, you know, historical elements is exciting, and people have a capital to do it. And so what we're going to be doing is taking those elements out and reusing those in future projects. So the windows of 8305 will be utilized in a future project, and there's mechanisms to ensure that happens. Our real goal throughout the historic process was to maintain what was historic, that being the rockery walls. And if you haven't been out there, obviously, most of you haven't, it's really quite phenomenal. But then if there was any other sub elements within the structures that, you know, kind of for the sake of, you know, moving forward, were going to be removed, we would take those elements, look to where we could use it. And I'll tell you, and Ms. Armamino can attest, it's actually not that simple to get people to reuse products. And so we really worked hard to be able to find a way in which we could use these, because the goal was, and we understood that TRP's kind of primary role and review of this is the historic kind of mitigation strategy. And so that was really paramount of us, is what we could do in this project, keeping things, reusing things. And then hopefully, as we get into other projects down the road, incentivize others and show us other people's the path that beyond just reports and photos, even if you can't keep things on site, you can look to reuse them elsewhere. And so that was a really primary goal. And to be honest, you know, despite the kind of, you know, the community comments, I'm actually quite proud of how that came together in comparison with how things were done, you know, historically, and, you know, what opportunities exist in the future. Again, just, you know, some additional kind of shore zone photos to kind of, you know, provide some, you know, some context. Really, yeah, really, you know, rather interesting and beautiful. And so, you know, the site plan was developed to, you know, show where all the coverage that is going to be kept. Obviously, you can see kind of the pink elements. The survey was developed by Loomis and Associates. And so all the lakefront, basically, as you terminate to steps and lakefront rockery work is completely being kept in undisturbed. Similarly, there's was an effort to maintain as much as the upland rockery work that was not noted within Judith Marvin's report. We we're going to be working to, you know, whatever is going to be removed, the project contractor, similar in nature to what he's doing with the windows, beams, and trim of the residence, will be taking this rockery work and incorporating them into future project development. Again, looking to create a historic and reuse program where possible to ensure that these items are going to be repurposed into some future development. Another comment that, you know, Mr. Barnett kind of outlined was, of course, construction management. That is obviously, you know, with these kind of unique roads kind of around Tahoe is, you know, a really common theme you see in, you know, project development and permitting. And so, you know, again, working with the project contractor, we work diligently to kind of work towards a construction management plan. I just would note that, you know, in past actions in front of this body and the TRP governing board, what was approved by those bodies acted as the baseline for how we were going to kind of manage construction management on site. In addition to the required findings, we're going to provide, you know, education to, you know, the folks working there. The construction, all construction parking will be maintained on site. If needed to be off site, all people will be brought in via transit to the site. And so there'll be no parking within the public right of way as a result of this. I think what's really important as it relates to kind of construction management from kind of a nuts and bolts construction management kind of siting perspective, this is actually a pretty good project area in regard to where you can kind of stage for future construction and demolition. Because as that site plan referenced, there is, you know, a really very large kind of parking area and asphalt there. Most projects that you would get around the lake, specifically in kind of unique environments, do not have that. So honestly, I actually saw the kind of on-site construction management opportunities as, and compared to other projects, as a real opportunity. But these other elements will be incorporated into into a standard included within the record, and everybody on site will be educated to them to minimize the impacts to the community and ensure that if the community has questions and they want to come and ask a contractor and a person on site, that even if that person on site doesn't have the answer, they'll be educated to the point where they can put that person with a question in touch with someone that can. Always looking to be as transparent as possible to make sure that questions can be answered, you know, rumor mill doesn't get forward. And again, if issues arise, then they can be dealt with immediately, and making sure that we can guarantee that through the construction process. Another item that was brought up was scenic concerns, in particular from the lake. As you know, as everyone in this room or many in this room know, the scenic requirements for TRP, especially on shoreline projects, are, you know, very arduous. And so utilizing the contrast scoring system within TRPA, our project received a score of 32.15. And, you know, many people that have seen, lakefront projects, I think, would understand a score of 32.15 is a really excellent score. Anything time you get over 30 is a really excellent score. And so, I would say that high score is testament to, you know, things we were looking at to, you know, blend with the natural environment and receive the highest score possible. That score allows for 2,600 square feet allowable, and we're well below what our allowable is. And so just wanted to kind of reiterate this point, specifically as we talk to scenic, as just another subcomponent of, you know, the items that we're compliant with TRPA. And just a special note that we are also reducing coverage. So we're below our allowable thresholds while simultaneously reducing our entitlements and banking them from their current status. There was some comments, and so just wanted to mention that this project will not be visible from the highway. And so really, you know, with that, just, you know, want to thank you for your time. Of course, open for any questions. The real things I'd want to touch on with this project, it is fully TRPA compliant. It ticks every box, literally. And we work through that with both TRPA staff and WBA. And again, thanks to them through, you know, kind of talking through and bringing all these issues to our attention so they could be addressed. The resource recovery plan keeps all historic elements identified on site, and all other things within the structure that are not being kept are being reused elsewhere. And I would like to say in other projects, like, that's a gold standard for what I've seen, you know, come through this body in the past. Construction management, we upon receiving, you know, the first discussion from the neighbors, we took it upon ourselves and started developing a very robust construction management plan, working with the contractor, working with people involved to address that concern head on and do whatever, you know, was needed to mitigate concerns raised by the community. Scenic evaluation, just touched on that, was obviously, you know, very well scoring, remaining allowable, visible mass, and so forth. And so, you know, with that, again, I really would thank everyone for their time and consideration today. And if there's any comments, happy to address them. But thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Eckstein. I'll have some questions, but we'll get to those in a minute or two. Question for our council, unless, do you have anything else?
No, thank you.
Do you mind turning off the microphone while before you try and observe the one microphone approach that Georgina has recommended to us? Question, and before I open the public hearing, legal counsel, I think we have Mr. Marshall with us today.
Yes, and I'm here too, Andrew.
Oh, Marcia, good. Excellent.
Yeah.
So Marcia will take these questions. Thank you.
Very good. That sounds great. Thank you, Marcia and John. Marcia, can you please talk to us from the TRPA's perspective about the piecemealing issue that has been raised?
Yes, I'm happy to do so. Andrew, similar to the comment that was raised earlier, for a single family dwelling, these applications are treated as a standalone project. And there's really nothing in the facts surrounding this that would lead me to believe that this is anything other than an application that can be treated as a standalone project here.
Thank you, Marcia. I will have some follow-up questions for our staff and for the applicant, but what I'd like to do is the good people who have been sitting here patiently since the meeting began, and I'm sure online, I'd like to give them a chance to speak. So we'll start with anyone who's here in the room. Today we have 3 minutes identified per speaker. Georgina will monitor the clock and let you know when we're closing in on that. Please come to the podium, press the button that has the silhouette of the face and sound waves coming out of it one at a time. Identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is
and we'd
Tony.
Like to hear what you have to say.
Thank you.
I'll open the public.
Also, staff, thank you for allowing me to do this today. Yes. I'll get my
I'm in a Zoom meeting. I can't talk.
My name's Tony Evans. Somebody talking?
Yeah. All right. I'll call you back. Bye.
Who's calling you back?
Sounds like Ms. Cornell.
Ingrid, could you mute yourself, please?
My name is Tony Smith. Evans. I live at 8547 Meeks Bay Avenue. And I did write this letter to staff and to you to consider the issues. This project is not a singular project. You may think that it is, but the elephant's in the room. It was originally submitted for consideration with 8307 on Meeks Bay Avenue and scheduled for April 28th. It also will involve and is anticipated to be involved that they would reduce the area on 8305 by doing a lot line adjustment and actually making it a smaller lot. That's so that the reason for that is to be able to get an expanded project on 8307. If you can imagine owning a small house next door to these properties, they're going to put a 17 bedroom project on this project. And you have five bedrooms over those four garages, and it's a caretaker that's going to live there. But that garage and those five bedrooms will be allocated for not potential rental. They already have approved from El Dorado County permits to rent what was there. And I don't think the county even knows that they're doing what they're going to do. But if they do, think of yourself in the same neighborhood within blocks or feet. And you have a 17 room, 21,000 square foot project. What is not shown, and I'd love to have you bring that back up to that illustration on the site and then what's the next lot. There's also a third lot that shares that same driveway.
Can you use them?
Georgina, are you able to pull up that site plan again for us?
Thank you for this time. This area... Speak loudly.
Yeah, we aren't going to be able to hear you.
That's fine. The driveway comes in and comes up at a 19% grade right now. It's blind. You don't really see the intersection as you're coming up that street. This project will be completed in conjunction with the next project. And that driveway that they're showing that would go to the next lot is also shared by another very large 3/4 acre property that has a house up that's in contract for $6.5 million. And that house will share that same driveway. So I'd like to just for a minute take a thought that every other street coming in at that confluence, all the traffic coming from Meeks Bay Avenue, public traffic, neighborhood traffic.
That's 3 minutes.
Really? Oh my goodness.
Go ahead. You can finish the point you're making, please, Mr.
Evans. You can imagine two roads coming together like this, and then the road, which is a short road out to Highway 89. This is all traffic from Meeks Bay and Meeks Bay Avenue over there. And then we're down this way and we go straight and all our traffic to go to Meeks Bay to take advantage of the beautiful beaches, the people that don't have property on the lot, on frontage on the lake. It's all going in that direction and coming this direction. And then traffic is coming in and out. When you come off the freeway or the highway there, you really are gunning it because on the highway is going like this and you're going up this hill. If you're going out, you gun it. But if you're coming this way and you're coming down, all the traffic that are going into this commercial, and it is a commercial development, please, you're going to rent 17 bedrooms and those two parcels and a third parcel are going to be coming up the street. Every one of the parcels coming in there at that intersection and going out to the highway and going into the driveway down to that project, they're all blind. And there should be a traffic study made on this because if I live there and I deal with the fire marshals, we deal with the mandatory evacuation. If you can imagine emptying out 17 bedrooms of people that are renting that come up and trying to get onto that short arterial 289, plus the people that are trying to get out from our homeowners association, this isn't a normal residence. I guess what I'm saying is we respectfully ask you to consider this with the subsequent project because it's going to be dependent upon a lot line adjustment and a traffic study should be made. And I know the guys on the fire department, that they'll just say if there's an evacuation, this project will minimize the efficiency of that evacuation. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Evans.
You bet.
My name is Robert Dunkel.
Go ahead, Mr. Dunkel. Come up, microphone, please.
Get to the microphone. I've been a full-time resident.
Come here.
Okay. Sorry.
Sorry.
I have 40 years of all year round and spent my summers from 66. The Meeks Bay there during the summers. And I have dealt with the traffic nightmare during the winter when we have 5 vacation rentals on the north side of Buttermilk. And when they're there, they're all stuck. I end up a lot of times hooking up vehicles and have to drag them out so someone else can get out. It's kind of a dangerous setup. And it's like 12-15% grade right there on Buttermilk. It's the same. It's always been the same way since then. I always used to go all the way down south, the end of Meeks Bay Avenue, because it didn't have such a steep grade going up there. And we've only lost, you know, our people that drove off the highway onto Meeks Bay Avenue and lost had three fatalities there about 22 years ago. So I've experienced to see all what happens, and it's hard to deal with the steep, icy things because Placer County, or El Dorado County, has a hard time bringing the grader down there and scrape. Sometimes they'll come down with the loader and get it, but it's extremely icy. Our contractor snow removal people come in there, do the houses, but they don't plow the street at all. So you go days. I had to bring people food in December from two different houses because they couldn't get out in their SUVs. So you had to have studded snow tires for years because that's what I've always done since 82 when I moved in my parents' house and after that. So I want to see it, if anything can be upgraded on those turns. It might be a little difficult, but my surveying engineer. What is it? He's now left us, but we shot all the corners and everything on most of the north track. And the problem is they can't change the telephone power lines and poles and everything. They're 17 inches, 11 inches, 9 inches. They're inside the street. So when you can't get by and there's not enough snow, when you bring in so much more people, it's hard for the snow storage. You know, we have a 10-foot snow storage that the county is supposed to get rid of. But when we get 2 or 3 foot days after one after another, I've experienced 25-foot berms on Meeks Bay Avenue.
That's 3 minutes.
Yeah. So that's about all I can say is if they want to be able to have that many rentals, we have a hard time with the 5 rentals we have from Buttermilk to the end of the street, the north end of Meeks Bay Avenue. So if I thought we're going to need more, we're going to be able to take on that much more, I'm almost ready to leave my property because you can't get past those people and they're stuck.
Thank you, Mr. Dunkel. Anyone else in the audience? Yes.
Hi.
Go ahead and swing the microphone back. Thank you.
My name is Linnea Kellett Hall, and my great-grandfather, Oswald Kellett, was the one who subdivided that area. And as Mr. said, Oswald restricted the deed so they wouldn't have any businesses to compete with the resort. And this parcel, for whatever reason, did not have that deed, and it was not purchased by Oswald. So I don't know the history of the parcel where they want to do this. But historically, that area, Meeks Bay Vista, Meeks Bay, on the north side of Meeks Bay, it has always been single family homes. It is a very entrenched community. In the summers, when you take a walk or a fall and your neighbors are there and you're, hi, what happened over the winter or the summer? It is a very tight community, and this does not belong there. It just does not. It doesn't comport with the emotional ethos that we have because of our history at the resort. And even when they come in and they tear down a cottage and they build a big house, big as they can, it's kind of a bummer, but at least I know that they're doing that because they love the lake. They love for their families to grow up there and to learn the values that Tahoe is really about. It's not about a mansion. It's not about an underground swimming pool, which we got going in our neighborhood. It's about single families. And I don't have a problem with people renting. Oftentimes they need to do that to pay the taxes or the utilities. But this is essentially a motel. You're driving in, you have a room. It's a motel. It does not belong in our neighborhood. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Kellett Call. Anyone else in the audience in person?
I'd like to say a few things when the time comes. So I'm the big
motel. Mr. Hearing Officer, I'm Bill McGrath. I'm one of the homeowners in the area. I would like to hear the comments, if I could have the courtesy of hearing the comments from anybody who's online, and then I will wind up at the end. Thank you.
Mr. McGrath, would you mind turning off the microphone? Going? So we only have one set of comments.
We have the one.
Thank you. Georgina, will you please look for a show of hands for those who are participating remotely?
Members of the public who would like to address the hearings officer may do so at this time by utilizing the hand raising feature in the Zoom app. The hand icon is located on the bottom of your Zoom screen, or by dialing *9 if you're on your phone. If you'd like to comment, please raise your hand now and I will announce and unmute you in order, and you'll have 3 minutes to make your comments. And we'll start with Michael Z.
Hi, thank you. My name is Michael Zakaris. My family's been coming to Tahoe for 4 generations since the 1930s and owns property just a few doors down from this proposed development. Meeks Bay is an inexorable part of my childhood, my earliest memories, my love of nature, my appreciation and respect for our environment. I wanted to speak out because it's the least I can do to voice my alarm at what I've seen is planned. As Brandy reminded us, and Mr. Evans too, we know that this so-called guest house is just phase one of a two-phase process that will ultimately seek to construct a 17,000-plus square foot mansion in addition to the guest house. You don't build a guest house and not the main house. So please, let's not be fooled about the idea that this is a standalone project. That's really just quite silly. I sent in various photos of 17,000 to 22,000 square foot mansions so we could get some perspective. But just to save time, those of you at your computers, just Google Tom Brady Mansion. You'll see what a 22,000 foot complex looks like. Or just walk past Rock Haven at 8217 Beaks Bay Ave and think for a moment that this joint project will end up being 30% larger. You talk about significant effect, which sometimes sounds like a euphemism. This is the definition of significant effect. So please spare me your comments about keeping some of the boulders. I'm sorry, but that's laughable. I'm sure that the shore stonework will look just the same with a mansion as a backdrop. We know that the permit for vacation rental has been submitted, so this will become luxury pseudo motel on the water with huge disruptions to the serenity and history of this part of the lakeshore. Prepare for the Marriott by Bukola. My question for Mr. Bukola is this: why? Is he so insecure about his wealth, his fame, his status, his sense of self that he has to construct such an excessive, ostentatious display to compensate? Does he not have any sense of humility or any desire to join the community here in a neighborly fashion with respect for the history and serenity of Meeks Bay? There are many ways to build beautiful homes along the water, homes with ample space for a dozen family members or more, homes that blend in, homes that seek to become part of Tahoe rather than dominate its shoreline like some kind of real estate cockfight. It's a sad commentary on this country that someone has so little appreciation for the world around him. It's private property. I can do what I want. How often do we hear some version of that refrain? Here's the thing. Just because you can do it doesn't mean you should. Even if this monstrosity is deemed lawful at the end of the day, it's an affront to the custom, tradition, history, community, the fragile environment of Lake Tahoe. It signals a misunderstanding and a devaluing of this wonder of the world. So I hope Mr. Bukola will ask himself, is this necessary? I hope he reconsiders his plans and resizes them and comes back with something that we can all embrace and even celebrate. Thank you very much.
Maybe a time before—
Thank you, Mr. Zakaris.
Maybe a time for me to respond briefly to that or not. Yeah, it was pretty vitriolic, very personal, but I won't make my remarks personal at all. But if y'all want to hear what the plan is, I'm more than happy to tell you. By the way, this piecemeal thing, some scheme, it's not. We wanted everything to be submitted at once. The second one's coming. We were told from a regulatory perspective we couldn't do it because the lot line adjustment had to occur first. So to my utter disappointment, we don't have both projects here today. So does that cause all of you some sense of peace that there's no nefarious attempt to break this down and sneak it by folks? Let me give you a little bit of history here, because you should know. My grandfather came over from Italy. And he worked up at Crystal Bay getting cabins ready when I was really a toddler. My father helped him. And we didn't have the money to rent a place, but we went up and that's where we stayed. All the summers in high school, I worked up in Lake Tahoe. It's been my love. First vacation home I ever bought, I still own. It's in Tahoe City, and I just let folks use it. But I bought it in 1990. I have been a homeowner on the lake at Cascade Road. Have any of you taken the time to call my neighbors, call Brian Ruggiero, or ever call John Shue, or call the Ebrights, who you know are historic family, and say, what is this guy like?
What does he do when there's a neighbor in need? Is he loud? Does he use the property a lot? Has he ever rented the property? We went ahead and got a rental permit for it. I don't have the guts or the heart to rent it because it's a personal residence. So I don't want to do that. Just like with our family here, we are not going to be renting this property with any kind of regularity at all. And the plan would be only to the very closest friends and only in an abbreviated way. Those of you that are concerned about noise and speakers at night, why don't you call Cascade and find out what kind of a charge I took when a neighbor was making lots of noise and having fraternities overpopulate the property, et cetera. It was me and one other homeowner that came up with the regulation. I'll sign anything you want. But the plan here is not to be renting this property. It is for my family. When we go up for Lake Tahoe, I only allow four cars, even though we have spots for five, only allow four up there. We shuttle people. And you know that with two other families that come and their kids, and now that one of them is married, we are five bedrooms short. And that's if we have six people on the floor. That's just for the 4th of July. My family, we have five kids. There are seven of us in the family. And with a significant other and other friends, those bedrooms get filled. I will tell all of you that never will this property be rented, ever, without us being there or without having a professional caretaker there. And the plan would only be, if we ever get to it, to maybe rent it 20 days of the year, maybe 20 days of the year. This is not going to be a Motel 6 that's being run. I have a home in Rancho Santa Fe, and it's under all kinds of pressure to be rented. I've never rented a day. I've never rented Cascade a day. I've never rented Old County a day because I want this for our personal residence. None of you, I'm disappointed, as good neighbors and people that are really believing in the Tahoe spirit, pick the phone up to call me and say, hey, Bucola, what's this about? You never asked these people any references? Have you done any homework? You should, because you'll find out not only are we heavily involved in about every charity you can mention, but we are people of our word. We are people of our word. We do not want to turn this thing into some rental cavalcade, but my God, I've worked awfully hard. I've given a lot back and I continue to give more. But there's nothing wrong with when you have three families up once or maybe twice in the summer having a bedroom for everybody at all. And we may sell the smaller property. I don't know. But huge effort has been made to try to keep it as pristine there as possible. For example, I was told by Nick Exline, the TRPA sees the big boathouse we have as an eyesore. That's an eyesore. They don't want them there. I love the boathouses. 38 feet long or 37 feet long. It's beautiful. He says, you ought to remove it. You ought to remove it. So for great pain, we've agreed to remove that for nothing in return. We're going to get rid of one of the
people. Nicola, that's 3 minutes.
I'm sorry. But y'all, call me. Talk to me. I'll sit with you. The only property I've ever rented has been these Meeks Bay properties just this last summer because we knew we were going to ever destroy them. We knew eventually we were going to do that. Last thing, when I was told by the seller's broker, don't tell the people that you intend to tear these down, I said, I can't do that. I won't do this. Well, you can tell them after. You can change your mind. So I'm not going to do that. If I meet them and they ask me, I'm going to tell them the truth. And that's how I do things. You all will never deal with a traffic problem. Do you think I'd let more than five or six cars ever be there at any one time, ever, despite the massive parking? It's never going to happen. I don't want to have to subject you guys to the crap I see when I walk to the south with all the construction going down there. My wife and I can hardly take a walk. We're moving in and around construction equipment all the time. That's not going to happen. I'm not that discourteous neighbor, and you should come down and meet me or call me in the office so I can go through things with you. Maybe we can put some stuff in writing if you like to on it. But no, we want both these to be submitted at once, of course. And Tahoe is my dream. It's my very special property, and we want to have a family environment. We can get everybody up there where everyone has a bedroom, et cetera. That's what it's about. I would be shocked if this property, after it's up for 3 years, is rented one night. I'd be shocked. And if it is, it's going to be my L.A. friends that I know well. Anyway, I'm sorry it took so long, you guys, but this stuff's very personal. It's just not true.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Bricola. Georgina, let's continue on, please.
Next, we'll hear from Ingrid Kellett-Smith.
Yes, Ms. Smith.
Ingrid, you're muted. Can you unmute yourself, please?
Uh, Hello, my name is Ingrid Kellett-Smith. My family has been involved at Meeks Bay Resort and Meeks Bay Vista for 100 years. I understand Mr. Bucola would like to have a home large enough for his incredibly huge family. I grew up with 8 brothers and sisters on Meeks Bay Resort in a 3-bedroom house. We managed. We now have a house that is a family house with 15 grandchildren, 5 great-grandchildren, and we all managed to stay in this Meeks Bay house that we love. We are concerned not with the 5-bedroom caretaker cottage that you may or may not rent, that you may or may not have your entire family come to. Our concern is the monstrous house that will come afterward. The traffic problems, all of Meeks Bay Avenue, Buttermilk, they are all one lane. You take your life in your hands when you go down Meeks Bay Avenue from Highway 89. We play at that because it is so dangerous. I agree with the comments that have been made by the people who have come forward, and I thank them for the research and for their special messages. We would love to have you as a neighbor with a 5-bedroom home, but we're not interested in a 17-bedroom mansion next door. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Smith.
Next, we'll hear from Dana Schneider.
Yes, Ms. Schneider.
Mute. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, great. Thank you. My name is Dana Schneider. My husband and I have a home up in Tahoe Hills. And thank you, Mr. Bucola, for clarifying your position on, you know, the second proposed dwelling. I'm also a board member for the Friends of the West Shore. And, you know, the public comments that I would like to make is that, you know, the project was changed from the original project that was submitted to reflect, you know, the 17-bedroom, approximately 2,100 square feet residence with 2 elevators. And, you know, that was, you know, very concerning to me because, again, it is a very small community, single family homes. The whole Meeks Bay area there is under that, you know, district restrictions about single family homes. And this really does not have the character of, you know, a single family home. So it doesn't adhere to the existing character of the neighborhood and things like that. And I understand and certainly can appreciate and really appreciate your transparency about you do intend to go for the permit with the second building. I appreciate that very much. That is really, you know, it's informative to hear. So, you know, the concern is for the community, I think, from certainly what I'm hearing and certainly the letter that we've submitted from the Friends of the West Shore is that this just doesn't comply with the nature and community. Now, you may build this building and you may use it just for your family members. However, 10 years down the road, maybe it gets decided to sell. And then we've got a huge tourism, you know, situation there where we've got lots of people, you know, renting that property and all the problems that, you know, come along with that and all the changes in the community. So what, you know, what I'd like to see is really a, you know, more time for some public input, maybe some more time for people to meet you and talk to you about what your plans are. And, you know, that, you know, TRPA really reevaluate the application documents in light of, you know, again, your transparency that you are sharing and saying that you have every intention of building this other building too. So very much appreciate you allowing me the time to speak and thank you very much.
Can I answer your question about why the plans were modified?
Mr. Bucola, we'll come back to you after
okay.
we finish.
I just wanted to answer a question. Okay, no sweat.
Thank you, Ms. Schneider. Georgina?
You. Next, we'll hear from Summer Chrisman.
Yes, Ms. Chrisman.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for your time. And Mr. Bukola, thank you so much for clarifying. I'm sure this is incredibly difficult for you to sit through right now and be frustrated. I can see that you feel the same things I feel about Tahoe, and that you would feel the same. And I hope you understand when all we had to see was the plans, the immediate alarm and hackles rising. I'm sure you could imagine where all this is coming from. But now having the opportunity to hear you in those plans, I feel very much reassured. I still think that we have a traffic issue at that intersection, which I think is something that really we need to take up with the county on some kind of regrading just in general. And I was really heartened, I think, as a suggestion. I think it might relieve the entire neighborhood if your intentions are fantastic, but as everyone knows, things get sold. Maybe if we could get something in writing, if it does get sold, to also limit, so it's not rentable in the future, even if it does get sold. I see you nodding your head. Yeah.
But I would never do it so somebody couldn't rent it. But if we put some reasonable kind of restrictions, I don't really intend to rent it. Actually, not true. There's two LA families I would probably let stay 3 weeks during the
Mr. Bukola, we'll come back to you. Right, okay. If you wouldn't mind just
sure, but I'm
a list of those topics you'd like to respond
contact
to.
Me, y'all. Let's have dialogue about it.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So thank you for giving us that opportunity, and I hope that we get to cross paths this summer. I think the last thing I would like to add is I understand that the two applications had to be put in separately, and I guess I will add my comments on the other one the next time. I'm just concerned about all of the windows facing the lake and the glare coming off of them. I think it'd be my last real concern based on those. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crispin. Georgina?
Next, we will hear from Lisa Crispin.
Yes, again, Ms. Crispin. Lisa this time.
Yes, I'm... a generation older than the previous Christmas. Our property is the third cabin north of the proposed project. We have less than 1,300 square feet, and our family of 11 grew up staying there together. So it's not a huge cabin, and we love it. I'm a third generation owner. My grandparents purchased directly from Mr. Kellett in the 1920s. While the southern part of Needs Bay subdivision has been mostly rebuilt with what we like to friendly call in a friendly way McMansions. Our little section of the subdivision consists of mostly smaller, older homes. And what Mr. Bukola bought is part of that, the older historic homes. Even the single family 5-bedroom home doesn't really fit with the nearby existing residential density and intensity. And that's a concern for me. I'd also like to point out that Meeks Bay Avenue sounds like a grand street, and it is two-way, but it's really only one lane wide. And there are a significant number of walkers and bicycles in addition to vehicles. And that one intersection where the driveway is incredibly dangerous, no matter what direction you're coming from. Part of the finding response, section 21.2.2a, talks about the proposed project adheres to all applicable TRPA and Washoe County codes. And I'd like to point out that we are in El Dorado County in California, not in Washoe County and Nevada. I'm assuming that's just a typo. I'd also like to point out that the historical nature of the buildings and the rockery really can't be mitigated by using them elsewhere, but the historical nature is inherent in the land itself. And as much as I understand Mr. Bukola's, I really truly appreciate your comments and your obvious impassioned love for Tahoe. Once it's built, it's there. And who knows what the future will bring. So lastly, I'd like to say that in 2020, I was informed by staff, TRPA staff, that the current status of our little area is not in attainment with TRPA scenic thresholds. We had to replace a small sliding glass door that faced the lake because a bear broke it. And I could not replace it in kind because we were in not attainment area. So I don't understand how such a huge project in a non-attainment area with all the glass on the lake fits in. Anyway, I look forward to meeting you and talking to you this summer, Mr. Paul. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crispin.
Thank you.
Real quick, Lynn Barnett. I think the findings, there's some confusion because the findings that were submitted by the applicant as part of the application package are available online. We rewrote the findings. We fine-tuned them. And so the finding that was originally submitted, I believe, had a reference to Washoe County.
Thank you, Lynn. Georgina?
Next up is Paul Lloyd.
Mr. Lloyd, go ahead, please.
Can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I'm Paul Lloyd. We live about a block south of the current place on 8401 Meeks Bay Ave. And I share many of the concerns, if not all the concerns that have been talked about. And I would also say in regards to the new owner's love of the lake, I find it a little disingenuous that he would come into a neighborhood that is not really representative of what he's trying to do and be surprised with the outcry or take it as a personal affront, because we all take what he's doing as a personal affront. So I find it disingenuous just to begin with. Secondly, I have two children, 10 and 12, who are old enough to be biking by themselves, but still at an age where it's dangerous when you have people come into a rental property who don't know the area. There's lots of blind corners. It's dangerous enough even with the people who live there. And I couldn't imagine a rental property. I don't care that he doesn't say he's not going to do it. This is a permanent structure that's not going to ever change. It will become a massive rental place, and it'll be very dangerous to all the kids and all the people walking and all the dogs and all the pets, and it'll be a massive sore on the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lloyd.
Next, we have Holly.
Yes, Holly, go ahead, please. Are you there? And can you please give us your full name for our record?
Holly, you're muted. No, you're unmuted. You should be able to speak, Holly.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. If you could please give us your full name.
Yeah. My full name is Denny Dobbas, D-O-B-B-A-S. And we are adjacent, right next door to 8305. As we stated in our letter emailed to you, our family has been there 100 years. My brother and I own the home now, and we're very concerned. And Dr. Bukola, or Mr. Bukola, I wanted to tell you that you said to get a hold of you. A year ago, you and your wife and your caretaker walked over to the property line, and I was there, and you asked me about the bears. I had asked you, what were you going to be doing over there? And you said, oh, I'll get back to you on that. I asked your caretaker 3 or 4 times to let you know I wanted to talk to you. And he told me you were very hard to get a hold of and you really didn't want to talk. Those were his comments to me. So when we reach out, you didn't want to be talked to, is how I feel about this. We are your next door neighbors. I think you should have reached out to us and tell us your plans instead of getting it in through an email and looking at all these things that are going to happen. It's very disturbing to our family, what's going to go on there. And I ask you to be very considerate to the whole neighborhood and especially to us since we are right next door. And those are my comments. But if we do try to call you, I would like you to return our calls instead of hearing that you are a hard person to get a hold of. And you didn't want to talk.
That's totally. Let me invite everyone.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Mr. Buchla, we are in a public hearing right now, so we'll have time for you to respond when we close the public hearing.
Next is Scott Hansen.
Mr. Hansen, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity to say a few words. I didn't realize it was this Bob Buchla until I saw his face. I've known Bob socially for probably 20 years. I live full time in the Sacramento area, and I've got a cabin about 10 homes or so down from his property. What I can say about Bob, he does have a great reputation in the community. He's known as a generous individual and whatnot. And to be totally transparent, I was quite reluctant on whether I wanted to share my comments publicly or not, because I do respect Bob. Having said that, I have great concern of the size of the residence. When I saw the drawings a few days ago, I was just kind of aghast. This area of the lake has some of the smaller lakefront homes on the lake, right? They're very small properties to speak of, and kind of stacked on top of one another. And just a home of this size coming into the neighborhood is just going to look so out of place and really change greatly the character of the community. And I think for us, that's our greatest concern. And of course, also the traffic and the parking of a place that size. And if the intention is to not really rent it, I would also ask maybe he just withdraws any sort of application and agrees never to have this as a rental. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Hansen. Georgina, do we have others?
I'm not seeing any other hands raised. If there is anybody else who would like to make a comment, please raise your hand now. And we do have a comment from Robert Tolan.
Yes, Mr. Tolan, go ahead, please.
Robert, you are muted on your device. Could you please unmute?
I thought it was unmuted.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, great. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to say a few words. One of the things I'm very concerned about, especially when we have this ongoing drought, is a 17,000 square foot house with however many bedrooms, and the wastewater and water consumption that's going to occur. What is the plan for them what will be the plan if they all flush the toilets at the same time? Is there enough infrastructure suitable in that area to handle such a large load? I know that it's unlikely that all 17 toilets will flush at the same time. However, they could be flushed regularly often during a full load stay. So that's my main concern there. The other concern I have is emergency services response to that area at any time of the year, whether it's the wintertime or the summertime. As a retired State Park Peace Officer, I am concerned about emergency response to medical issues as they arise in that area. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tolan. Georgina, do we have others?
I got my comment.
Brandy?
I just want to put on record that we did receive, or I received an email addressed to you, Mr. Strain, and then me from Bill Lyons, and he expressed concerns with the size of the property, using it as a vacation home rental and how it's being processed. I printed out a copy of the letter. It came out a little splotchy, but I'm going to save it as a matter of public record. And I just wanted to acknowledge that we did receive that. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandy. Georgina, anyone else online or virtual?
At this time, I'm not seeing any other hands raised.
Let's go to Mr. McGrath then, who asked to be our final speaker. Mr. McGrath?
Here's the button. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to comment. I also appreciate the fact that Mr. Bukola, I mispronounced your name, is on the line. I wish you had contacted your neighbors at Meeks Bay before these reports came out. We learned about it 5 days before the April 28th meeting, and we went online. We find this monstrous 17,000-foot house, and we go through it, and we count your bedrooms, and we see 12 bedrooms, each with an ensuite, and we all think hotel. It's all we can think about. And had you done a little public relations in advance, had you talked to your next-door neighbor, a lot of this would have been resolved, or hopefully resolved. But let me explain it this way. If you're committed to the fact that you really want to have a private residence, I knew that house had sold. We all thought, well, there goes the little house. Now we're going to see a bigger house. None of us expected 17,000 square feet and a 17,000 square feet and a 4,000 square foot detached garage. We see four parking spots. We see two giant structures in a little community. That little hollow of Meeks Bay is just tiny little lots with tiny little cabins. And you propose this and shock us all, and everybody in the neighborhood panics. That's why there are 50 people who've written letters against your project. And let me make it easy on you. You say, well, I'm going to rent to a couple friends in LA. Here's what I suggest you do. Announce today that you're going to forfeit or give up your vacation home rental permits. Because if you don't, you can rent it for 365 days a year. And if that's what your intent is, well, then we're going to continue to battle that structure because we believe that's a commercial enterprise in our little sleepy neighborhood. So I would encourage you to do that. For the record, my name is Bill McGrath. I'm a resident. My wife and I have a home at 8357 Meeks Bay Avenue. I went to the same law school that Mr. Bukola went. I don't have anywhere near the reputation he has as one of the finest personal injury lawyers in California or the country. I'm just a little old country lawyer, 45 years practicing out of my office in Reno, licensed in both states. I'm concerned about the fact that when this application was filed, they had to fill out a form. The form was not completed correctly. There is a specific obligation of the applicant, and Mr. Exline's obligation is to check and initial the box that he hereby declares under penalty of perjury that all of the deed restrictions and restrictions have been provided. And he didn't do that. And a lawyer makes you think, well, that's kind of crafty. Didn't sign that. And nowhere in the documents was that done. And then we go out, and I mean, we did a lot of digging and found a 1947 deed. Mr. Exline says, oh, it's no big deal. I don't know that. I'm not a property lawyer. I've suggested, and some of our neighbors have gone out to hire property lawyers who want to investigate that deed, because that deed specifically says that the premises shall be used only for private residential purposes. It's a 1947 deed. It's on of record. You can read it. It's in their papers. And all of us think this is suspicious as heck. Here comes Mr. Bukola, the nice guy, according to my next door neighbor, Scott Hansen. The bottom line is that we are trying to avoid the panic of a monstrous rental property. Bring your friends up on a weekend. You can work something out privately. Give up your permit. And I have my in-laws from Connecticut coming next week, and they're going to be at my cabin for Tahoe. I'm not going to be there, and I'm not charging them. But the bottom line is a lot of people let people come into their cabins. If you need 12 bedrooms in a private home, I don't think people would panic. It's the rental permit that panics people. And I can just tell you that that's what scares us all to death. The question was made about whether the driveway's 19%. Your plans from Loomis and Associates say it's 19%. And the TRPA code 34.3.2E says, in no case shall the driveway exceed 15% slope. That's a tiny little nitpick. But the driveway's out of compliance. You're going to build a five-bedroom house, then you want to build a 12-bedroom house, and next door to you is a torn, old, worn-out house at 8311 Meeks Bay Avenue. They're coming next for the next permit. And so there will be three houses coming up that same steep driveway, which have to be resolved. And they hit an intersection. They hit the worst spot on Meeks Bay Avenue. It's an intersection. And that's the intersection coming down. You know, you drive down the hill, you go straight down your driveway. And it's the worst location you could have found. But that's what we're faced with. The next question I have is, why is the structure on the revised permit on the side of the property? Why is TRPA allowing the house to be on the side of the property? The answer is because they know the next permit for 8307 is going to be the big permit with the boundary line adjustment. Now, if we're only considering 8305, make them put it in the middle of the lot so that Mrs. Dobas, the next door neighbor, doesn't have to have a house 5 feet from her property line. Put it in the middle, 20 feet each side. It'll fit. The real reason is because they want to put the big house on, which they withdrew. And again, Mr. Bukola, that made us all suspicious. We think this is piecemeal. We think this is an improper way to, you didn't contact us until, we didn't see you till today, but that's why we're all suspicious. We all don't trust you. My next door neighbor loves you, but I'm just telling you, we would love to have you in the neighborhood. Just build a house that doesn't rent, and you can come to our homeowner association meeting on July 2nd. All I'm saying is, and I'm the secretary of the homeowner association, you can afford the $75 annual dues.
That's 3 minutes.
Too expensive.
Final comment I want to make is this. This is another thing that makes us suspicious. Let me hand, if I can, a couple photographs or a photograph to the hearing officer. I was on my boat on Friday afternoon. I went up and I took a picture, went up into the property, took a picture from the water of the house. And if you look in the picture, you can see centered in the house with two white windows is one of the two structures on 8505, which is going to be demolished. To the right, there's another house that is the footprint for the current new, what we call, I guess it's called a guest house now. It was originally called a caretaker's cabin and a detached garage. But that's the second one. The little house on the far right in the picture is unrelated. That's on the Dobas property. But what I want to point out is you see in front of the little house in the back with the little upper windows, which are white, there's a single tree. And on the site plan, that's identified, I think, as a 12-foot pine tree. It's going to be chopped down because the house is going to come all the way out to the front of where this house is. If you look on the plans, you can actually see in the footprint of the new 5-bedroom guest house, you'll see where they're going to chop that tree down. And that means that this tree is the last tree between the house and Lake Tahoe. So the back patio or the decks of this new guest house is going to have an unobstructed view of Lake Tahoe. And the reason I point that out is that when I looked at the plans that were drawn by the architect and submitted by Mr. Exline, which is the second page of this document, you'll see what they call a screening diagram. Now look in the upper right corner, you'll see where the new 5-bedroom garage is located. It's screened. You see all the shading? That's what the architect says is screening. And if you read the fine print, it basically says 5% of the house will be seen. Well, if you go back to the picture, that's a lie. The picture shows the house, and when you chop down the only tree between it and the water, that's a lie. So, and let me give you another example. Look on the second page here again, and this is with respect to the house that is the going to be the, I'm talking specifically about the big house on the left side, which is the 12-bedroom house. Do you see all the screening that's done there? You see in the center, right about the center line, there's a major screen. Well, if you go back to the first page, that tree can be seen. It's the single pole tree where somebody over the years, not Mr. Bukola, but somebody over the years has chopped all the branches off of it. So the house that's to the left of the tree has an unobstructed view of Lake Tahoe. And if you look at the last picture I gave you, here's the view from Mr. Bukola's new house of that tree. It looks like a palm tree because it's been chopped off all the way up. And at the top, it's been topped off by some lightning strikes. And all I have no idea what topped it off. I don't think somebody climbed up there and chopped it. But my point is, when you look at the plans Mr. Bukola's experts and his architects submitted, they tell us, oh, that's all shaded. That's just a lie. I mean, the architect who drew this drawing should lose her license. It's frustrating to us when we see this, and it should be frustrating to TRPA when they get lied to in the documents submitted to them by the professionals on behalf of the owner. This is just slippery practice. There is no, I'll take you up on my boat this weekend if you want. You can see the whole site where the 17,000 square foot house will be built and the 4,000 square foot guest house we build. These houses are going to have spectacular views of Lake Tahoe. I credit Mr. Bukola for finding a beautiful lot. I think it's a problem because if they have unobstructed views of Lake Tahoe, anybody on Lake Tahoe has an unobstructed view of that house. And this house is going to, it's as large as the Sunnyside. I was at Sunnyside the other day. I paced the back of Sunnyside. It's 200 feet long, wide, like Mr. Bukola's house. There's going to be a Sunnyside restaurant and inn. They have hotels above it on Mr. Bukola's lot. And frankly, that's just too big for a lot of us. I have a 50-foot lot with a side yard setback. I have 40 feet. So does Mr. Hansen. We get along fine. But the bottom line is, Mr. Bukola, you can eliminate a lot of this by simply telling us, I won't rent the house. You can say, I'll rent the house no more than 5 days a year. If you said that, I think a lot of people would say, oh, we could put up with 5 days a year. I really don't want your anybody parking. Your renters, I trust you, but your renters, I don't trust. And if they park and they say, well, I'm going to the Bukola house for a big party, they're going to park up and down my street. I don't want any of them parking on the street. And the condition that Mr. Lynn Burnett has given us says no construction parking. I don't think it says no parking, period. It should say no parking, period. I don't want to limit it to construction. I'd like to have people park all over Mr. Bukola's lot if he has room for them. But I don't want him adding to, I don't want renters adding to the street. So I'm running out of time. I think I've probably gone past my 3 minutes. I appreciate the courtesy. I'll say hello to Mr. Marshall, who I've worked with over time over the years. I'm a neighbor. I'd like to have you at my house for a drink someday, Mr. Bukola, but just please try not to be such a, what appeared to us to be a bully. You came in, you didn't tell anybody anything. You dropped all these plans on us. And you caused a lot of consternation. I talked to a lot of people in my neighborhood in the last 3 weeks. Everybody opposes your project. Now, I haven't spoken to everybody, but everybody who I talked to has. So hopefully you can eliminate the concern about the rentals. If you have a big house, more power to you. I'm just saying the rentals are what causes us all a concern. Thank you. And please ask your engineers and draftsmen and architects to be honest in their paperwork, because they really are slippery and sneaky. And that, as a lawyer, it makes me very angry.
Thank you, Mr. McGrath. And if you would turn the, thank you. And we will make sure and add all of the written comment that we received leading up to today's hearing, including the ones that Brandy has added for us. Those are all part of the record for this project. And those have, we've looked at them. I think we've looked at all of them. Any more online speakers, Georgina?
We have no more hands raised.
All right. At this point, I will close the public hearing on this item. I do have some questions both for the applicant and the staff, and I'll give the applicant an opportunity to make some statements or some responses.
Sure.
Then questions I have, I'll start with the staff before I get to Nick.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to ask the questions of staff first, but you want me to respond?
No, I'll ask the questions for the staff first in their review. And I do want to restate for everyone who's participating today what we're here to do today. And that is to consider the review and the demolition and subsequent approval of the house that's on 8305 Meeks Bay Avenue. That's the one that's before us today. I'll get to the question of potential what other applications came in. I have some knowledge, but I have a couple of questions about that, but I want to make sure it's clear to everyone that the action, the item that is before us for possible action today is the house located at 8305. I think I've got that address right. Brandy, yes, thank you. And we have made the correction in the staff report at the top of this item that it does in fact include a four-car garage and not a three-car garage, based on the drawings that we've reviewed. What I'd like to do is ask the staff from the key provisions of our regional plan and the key provisions of our code of ordinances, which really drives the project design and the use itself. The use of what I understand is being proposed as a single family residential use, that's an allowable use in this plan area. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And secondly, the density that's proposed, I think the normal single family density is one unit or one dwelling unit, one residence per parcel with a certain exceptions for larger lots. And does this meet the density that's in the TRPA code?
Yes, it does.
And from my review of the elevation and the site plans, does this meet the height ordinance as a rebuild or as a new structure?
It does conform to height, yes.
And does it conform to the exterior lighting provisions, or have you conditioned that in the permit so that it will conform to the exterior lighting standards?
Yes, it does.
And can you restate for us, please, how the land coverage will be addressed? I realize today, based on it being a historic structure, it's got more coverage than had it been a vacant lot, given its low land capability and a very low percentage of land coverage allowed for a new structure or perhaps even an IPS parcel. Can you tell us how the land coverage is being addressed?
There's a reduction in land coverage, but it's... The reduction involves banked coverage, which by TRPA code with findings can be reused. The fact that they have excess land coverage above their base allowable coverage, existing grandfathered in excess, they will have to mitigate the new project by paying an excess coverage mitigation fee or retiring land coverage in lieu of the fee.
And have you written that requirement into the permit?
Yes, we do have an excess coverage mitigation condition. Do you want the condition number? Do you have that?
Yeah. 3.
Yeah, it is, it's 3F.
3F, very good. I see that, thank you.
And I'm going to add as well that we do have an exterior lighting plan, which is condition 3C.
The driveway and parking standards, how does this project meet those standards?
TRPA for residential review defers parking to the county. Our understanding is it requires two parking spaces. That's typical in El Dorado County and all the counties around the lake. And it has adequate access to a paved road. So in addition to parking, it meets the driveway. It meets all the basic service requirements, water, sewer, electricity, and paved access.
And you've already taken us through how the existing driveway is steeper than would be permitted for a new driveway. And the code has to make some accommodation for how an existing driveway is dealt with for projects like this, that it's remaining in some form and some fashion.
The existing driveway, if this was a vacant parcel, that driveway would not be approvable. But it does exist, and they're proposing to widen that driveway by a small amount. And so there's a gray area in the code, in my opinion, on whether or not that expansion would be allowed. If you want to take a strict reading of the code, no driveways over 15% are allowed, and that extension exceeds 15% in slope.
And the expansion is in width, not in the length. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and that is a gray area, and I know it's difficult for our code to pick up every single situation, but this is probably not a unique situation. We've probably come across this before in sloping parcels.
I've been doing this, as you know, Andrew, since the 1980s, and I can say that there's some give and take on this. My only experience with widening roads that are oversteepened was probably on public land, national forest lands, and those projects were accommodated.
And in terms of water quality BMPs, particularly for the driveway, it looks like the house BMPs or the residential BMPs are relatively straightforward, but the driveway, do you feel comfortable that if we were to, for example, accept this driveway and its configuration and the widening that's proposed, how do you feel about the adequacy of the water quality protection measures?
I'm going to defer that to Marlon, who reviewed the BMPs and the BMP calculations in detail.
I reviewed the BMPs, and through my findings, I saw that they're adequate. There's more than enough BMPs. There's a slotted drain plus some infiltration trenches on the side of the driveway.
And can you, Lynn or Marlon, restate what your solution was, now that we're sort of into the nuts and bolts of it, of the driveway widening and potential option?
Yes. So should you decide that the driveway is inappropriately being widened, then we would require that widened section be eliminated from the plans. But as I'll point out here, it narrows the driveway, so they would have to bring in or retain a little bit of driveway that they plan to take out to maintain the 10-foot width. And we have that area has a slope between or less than 15%, but more than 10%. So the code requires that new driveway area. It shows on the other plan, but it requires a finding, and we've got a draft finding and a permanent condition that addresses this. And I can read that into the record.
Can I see that?
Yeah, it's electronic, and I can read it, but I can share it with you here. Would you prefer that I read it in, or?
No, I just want to read it.
Yep, there you go.
No problem.
Okay.
just don't know if we can walk right now. I don't know if that is your time to call. Okay.
So do what's best.
Okay.
Sorry.
Is there anything we can do?
I don't know. I've never had to do this to me. I've taken them to dinner and concerts and everything. I've never done anything like this.
She's grabbing Paul Nielsen, who's an EMT.
If he's here.
If yes. he's here.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So just to reiterate, we made finding number 34.3.2E from chapter 34 of the code. It's listed in verbatim, and then we have a rationale for making the finding. And again, this is addressing that section that's over 10%, but less than 15%. That would be
a change,
right. So that portion is approvable.
Okay. Thank you, Lynn and Marlon. And from your review, talk to B, please, about your conclusions with respect to the scenic impacts from the lake that Mr. McGrath has raised. I'm looking at a different sketch that was in the packet than the viewpoint that he presented, and I realize that viewpoints move and are not necessarily static, but the one that we have in our packet,
yes,
it shows a much different tree canopy situation that gave me confidence that this exhibit led to the scoring or the perimeter. Different than that Mr. McGrath in. Hold on.
Okay, so our scenic review is done by Melissa Shaw, who is in Arizona, unfortunately can't speak to this today. And she went off the materials that were presented. If there's, if it's been demonstrated that there's inaccuracies, misrepresentations, then that could be rescored and we could take a second look at that. Mr. Chairman, if I could quickly,
I have explain. A different viewpoint.
Well, let me explain. There at the lake shore, there are at the edge of the property, if you look at the site plan, there are two trees down, way down by the shore. So if you stand over to the side, you can line those trees up and they will screen part of the house. And the second drawing that came in the more recent one shows about a 50% screening. But if you take your boat one boat length to the left, it's wide open. And so it's like standing behind a car in an empty parking lot. You can't see on the other side. But if you step over here, you can see. And my point is simply that the drawings are really misleading and should be more accurate. And I can guarantee you that palm tree doesn't shade Mr. Bukola's 17,000 square foot house. Thank you.
We're not here to debate that one, Mr. Grant.
May I add to Andrew that yes, when you look at lakefront properties, as you move around, you get different viewpoints. The viewpoint that we reviewed that were in the plans, and we assume the plans are accurate, was pre-selected by TRP staff, Tiffany Good, on June 28th, 2011. So that, I'm sorry, 2021. So okay. that is, that was the selected viewpoint. And it is possible that another viewpoint would show a different result. Yes.
The score that we have shown in our calculations is a 27 and a quarter, it looks like. And there is a similar number that is in our staff report. And, the applicant's representative, Mr. Exline, I thought I had put in my notes that it scored a 32, I thought I had written down. Can you explain the difference?
No, again, I'm sorry, I'm at a disadvantage here. Maybe Mr. Exline can.
Okay, I'll ask that of him in just a minute.
Yeah.
All right, very good. And my last question is, how does this project consistent with the applicable historic finding? I mean, the historic resources from chapter 67.
Yeah, so per chapter 67 of the TRPA code, you cannot modify, add on, or demolish a historic resource without hearings officer review and approval. And you also have to mitigate the impact. And one of the options under TRPA code is to prepare a resource recovery plan or historic resource plan, documenting, you know, what's on the site. It's required to be prepared by a registered historian. And TRPA is required to consult with the State Historic Preservation Office. So they're proposing to mitigate the impacts of removing the structure because they've prepared the resource plan, as well as they're planning on keeping some elements of the historic site, yeah. The rock work. They're planning on keeping that on site. So that's how they're proposing to comply with Chapter 67 and mitigate the impact of removing the historic structure.
I'll mention too that the offer to recycle some of the building materials and all is not a TRP requirement at this time. That's a private offer that they've made.
That's what I gathered from that there was an intent to use some of the repurposed materials from the existing structure. So the TRPA staff is recommending approval of that Chapter 67 finding based on the historic resource report that's been prepared as mitigating the effects of the loss of a potentially significant structure. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And is this structure or this area, is it part of a mapped resource or a mapped area like are in other neighborhoods in the Tahoe region?
No, and you bring up a good point. There are historic neighborhoods such as Tahoe Meadows, Zephyr Cove, the Al Tahoe Forest Homes, and American Legion Tracks, but this has not been designated as a historic district. I can say that in the past 20 years, there's been efforts by TRPA to relook at some of those, but there's been no changes that I know of since the original historic districts were adopted in July 1987.
And so can you connect the dots for us, please, and how, if it's not one of our mapped resources, how does Chapter 67 apply in this particular instance?
We have a historian on staff, Jen Self, and TRPA, per her recommendation, made a determination that the structure was historically significant. And that's what triggered the preparation of the resource recovery plan, as well as consultation with SHPO. So we can make that determination on an individual basis, even if a structure is not within a historic district.
Okay. Thank you. I don't think I have any other questions. We've already talked about the piecemealing from our legal team. All right. Mr. Exline, I have a couple of questions for you. Actually, let me back up one more for the staff. You're fine right there. Just turn off the microphone, please. In the staff report, four pages back, I think it is, just in front of the required actions, there is a section near the top of the page, this page that is entitled Scenic Shoreland. This may or may not explain my question or provide some insight. Scenic Shoreland, Unit 6, Shoreline Unit Meeks Bay, that looks right to me, and the description of what was done and where it sits. Then the visual assessment for the proposed project on 660 Lakeshore Boulevard is in there.
Yes, I mentioned at the beginning that we had an error in there, and it's also repeated, unfortunately, in the conditions. So that's an error.
Okay, so we want to update that and correct that as part of any action here today. I did catch the one, Lynn, that you had brought up. I thought said it was in the permit.
Yeah. And here it is again. So,
and is it from what you can tell, and this I will ask, and first I'll ask you, then I'll ask Mr. Exline, this paragraph that starts with the visual assessment for the proposed project, does it look to you like it is the 660 Lakeshore Boulevard, kind of a cut and paste error, or is this actually for the Meeks Bay project and just has the wrong address?
It has
I can't
wrong,
tell.
It has the wrong address. we went back and looked at our correspondence with Melissa, and it's an error. But this is the scoring and the results that that were derived by Melissa in her evaluation.
Okay, so the score leads then to kind of the bottom line, so to speak. The score that's shown there is a 27, leads to the bottom line, which is the visible area that's allowed. And it shows us, if I'm reading it right, 1565 square feet. That's this project.
Yes, it is. That 1565 is for this project.
All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Eckstein, can you please describe for me, as I'm late to the dance, so to speak, compared to many of you, the nature of the boundary line adjustment? Was that filed first, second, last?
You know, I couldn't remember.
I'm curious on the sequencing.
Yeah, I'd hate to say kind of definitively one, two, or three. They were all relative. I mean, we could, you know, it's a relatively quick on kind of online search to be more definitive, but they were all relatively close together.
And could you tell me why the boundary line adjustment was withdrawn?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, in working with TRPA, routinely it's acceptable when you're dealing with a boundary line adjustment that is going to bisect a residence, that you're able to continue forward with the boundary line adjustment. And essentially within the TRPA permit, it's conditioned that that residence has to be removed prior to acknowledgement of the boundary line adjustment. And so that was the intent of the submittal to TRPA. And if, you know, reading the TRPA submittal letter, you know, kind of references kind of how things would have to be staggered. In dealing with El Dorado County, they had reached a determination that they would no longer accept boundary line adjustments that bisected properties, and that the property would have, or the structure, excuse me, would have to be removed. And so the projects at the time were assigned to TRP senior planner Teresa Evans. And so, you know, in discussions with Teresa Evans, for kind of simplicity's sake, for TRP staff, it was deemed more appropriate to withdraw it and take it from their plate. In all honesty, there was kind of a desire by me to, instead of withdrawing it, see if we could just kind of hold on, finish this phase, and then can continue forward with A307 and not have to do a full resubmittal. But just for kind of protocol within TRPA, it was deemed more appropriate to withdraw. So it wasn't, again, it was no kind of sleight of hand. It was just a simple kind of determination reached by El Dorado County. And then in a willingness and desire to help TRPA staff in the way they would like to see these projects treated, we withdrew it instead of looking to postpone it.
And where was that line proposed?
It was through the residence that exists on A305 currently.
In the A307 application that was filed and then withdrawn because
that project assumed the completion of the lot line adjustment. And so, you know, a little bit of background, due to, you know, kind of the timelines to permit projects at TRPA, oftentimes in the TRPA code and kind of, you know, processes within the agency allow for, you know, concurrent submittal, and then the conditions, of course, you know, have to establish kind of the staggering nature and what needs to be completed before one or before another. And so that was exactly what we were intending to do with the A307 residence, was, you know, look to have the boundary line adjustment, the removing structures and so forth conditioned within the permit. But again, based on past experiences, that would have been acceptable to TRPA, but unfortunately not the county with the lot line adjustment piece.
And it looks like from the site plan here, if the setback envelope, so to speak, the setback lines from the adjacent properties are properly shown, that the project as proposed meets what would be the county setback, since the TRPA in this instance does not have specific yard setbacks. Is that your understanding?
That's correct.
And that includes the 5-yard, the 5-foot setback on the adjacent property, what would be to the north.
Yeah, that's correct. And I, again, I, from my earlier comments, discussed with Loomis and Associates to kind of confirm that point, assuming that would be asked today, that, you know, there was, in regard to kind of past deeds or, you know, various other things in their research, and they said, no, we stand by the setbacks shown on the site plan in reference for the development and to establish the encumbrances on the property.
My take is that you'll find out if and when this gets submitted to the county for review, that that's one of the basic things that they'll check for is the yard setbacks.
Yeah, and I think what's really important to note with, and again, you know, speaking on behalf of Loomis and Associates, I really respect those individuals. They developed a site plan. There was a discrepancy with the assessor. We discussed it, you know, internally, kind of went back and forth and had done research. And it turned out the surveyor and their research was more accurate than the assessor. And I think that's really a testament to how diligently they go into these things. And again, they gave a caveat, you know, they're not land use attorneys, you know, always important to reference in these matters. But for how they do these things, they stand by the product.
The assessor's office is certainly tasked with keeping track of a large number of parcels compared to a civil consulting firm. Can you explain, please, the difference in the scenic scoring?
Yeah, I would. So stepping back, I as we looked at the 32.15 that I had referenced earlier, that was based on the submittal information that was provided. I would say routinely when I'm working with Ms. Shaw, and real credit to Ms. Shaw, kind of in her scenic review, we go back and forth regarding kind of interpretations, colors, materials. And that's always the pieces that go into the contrast scoring sheet. And so that was clearly the submittal number I had gotten. But Ms. Shaw was also kind of, as we were discussing things, amending on things on her end. And so I would not state the inaccuracy of Ms. Shaw's number. I would believe it was probably a function of me referencing a previous document and not referencing the one that she was using for the staff report that she was, you know, altering as we had discussions kind of on her end.
So she may have more current information. Is that what you're saying?
Well, typically what we've done in kind of, you know, littoral projects often is, you know, there, some of it's interpretive, meaning, you know, as you look at colors, textures, what does that mean from a score? You know, these various different sub elements. And so often what happens is we'll provide the contrast rating sheets, you know, we started with to Wells Barnett and then to Ms. Shaw. And then how these things, you know, if there's a just, you know, a there's a, you know, this color was, you know, should have been darker or lighter or, you know, whatever. Those elements are, and, you know, vegetative screening that was referenced as well. And those elements are routinely updated. So if there was a lower score, you know, that it resulted with Ms. Shaw through that process, I would look to rely on her number based on kind of from the date of submittal to where we ended. I, you know, and so if there was an error in what I said previously, I do apologize.
Yes, and certainly in the area of scenic quality, we all know that there's a certain amount of subjectivity goes with that. It's certainly not the hard science that other parts of the code lead you to.
And that's why I would want to, you know, be really, really honest to that fact, that that's the kind of push and pull of those things to make it as accurate as possible and defensible as possible. Oftentimes leads to, you know, decreased scores or altered scores in relationship with Wells Barnett and TRP staff more broadly. So it's not uncommon. So again, if I would rely on Ms. Shaw's number.
I was to encourage you and your client, Mr. Bukala, to do what else is might be possible with respect to any of the salvageable building materials or other design or elements that contribute to the historic significance of this structure. Again, we're only here to look at 8305, but certainly preserving or conserving the stonework, which is present in lots of different older lakeshore or lakefront properties around the lake. It's magnificent work. It has value. It tells a story, so to speak. I would certainly encourage you and your client to try and find other opportunities. As you had mentioned, the intention is there for some of the repurposed materials. Some of those are more usable in today's world than others. Obviously, that's correct. But certainly with some help of qualified professionals, my sense is you could probably interpret some of what this Meeks Bay neighborhood, the report and the resource assessment that were done by Ms. Marvin, excellent work, very thorough. It tells the story of the Meeks Bay neighborhood and the community and the people and the things that they did to create a place that welcomed many, many visitors over the years. It's an amazing story. Not at all discounting that they weren't necessarily the first people to come to Meeks Bay, but it's really a great inventory and a fabulous, I think, piece of professional work. And if there are any opportunities that you can advise your client on how to take advantage of that, I think that would be very well received by the community, and I encourage you to do so.
Yeah, definitely. And there were some other things in addition to what we looked at that we would like to move forward with. However, you know, in discussions with TRPA staff, because of the lack of certainty with how these things would be repurposed, it was decided not to include it. But, you know, as I mentioned earlier, some of the challenges can be just kind of the repurposing element unto itself. And so myself and Ms. Armamino had the idea that, you know, when routinely in my neighborhood, people put out things for free. So one of the ideas we, you know, wanted to look to incorporate into this project and in others as well was, you know, for example, the stonework was, you know, if we were not able to find a venue that was, you know, able to take all of that stonework and repurpose it, that, you know, similar to the free nature in my neighborhood, that you would look to reutilize that stonework, have, you know, some mechanism in which people could come and access it and look to repurpose it within the Meeks Bay area to the greatest extent possible. And we would still really like to pursue that. But again, and to be really kind of as it related to TRP, why they didn't want us to include that in the methodology, just because, and it makes logical sense, kind of, we couldn't guarantee that we, you know, we would have that anybody would take it, right? So it became kind of a something that you couldn't really define. So it became problematic. But we've explored kind of every avenue from, we've been engaging with school districts. We've been getting in with art teachers within those school districts to see, because one of the problems we had with the window panes we wanted to keep was, or repurpose, was energy efficiency. And, you know, I think at some point Molly had referenced that, you know, you'd seen those type of window frames engaged in art processes all the time. So we were, you know, Tahoe Truckee Unified School District, LTUSD, we were engaged in these, you know, with these entities to say, hey, will you be willing to, you know, take anything? We'll donate it, you know, all these various different things. So we really wanted to do as much as we can to repurpose it. And I think it's an important direction by TRPA. And again, I think, you know, looking at what we're able to do here, hopefully it's something that other applicants can build on as far as keeping and reusing, especially if at all possible locally.
Thank you, Nick, and certainly Mr. McGrath and the organization he leads and the members of the Meeks Bay Homeowners Group and the Friends of the West Shore may be great resources to try and help figure out how can we interpret what our community is and what can we do with it. How do we do it? Maybe it's not the windows. Maybe it's not.
Right, and I think there's what's interesting kind of with the historical analysis at some point too. I think you bring up a really good point in that there's the from Ms. Marvin and her excellent work, there's the things that from kind of the ABCs of, you know, how things are done with Cal SHPO and so forth that are or are not historic. But there's other things that may have community element. And so, you know, we're incredibly open to repurposing anything and, you know, opening it up to, you know, stonework to repurpose if other people down the street are looking to do things with their neighborhood and so forth. I mean, ideally, I'd love to keep it within that space to the greatest extent possible. You minimize, you know, GHG from transportation and so forth. And I think if we were able to make it work, I think it would be a really cool precedent and something that would be replicable in other instances in which you kind of open up this opportunity to locals. And I think it's always important to remember that, you know, and oftentimes, you know, when I'm meeting in front of a body or dealing with applications, I'm dealing with, you know, lakefront homeowners and so forth. And, you know, the people behind me kind of exist in that same space, but clearly when we know the demographics, most people in Tahoe do not. So great lumber, rock, wood that could be reused by the people of Tahoe, especially people of Tahoe of less means, would be fantastic if we could create that reality. And I would love to, whether it's through this project or for a more elongated discussion with TRPA, begin to develop systems like that, you know, completely unrelated to this, because I think it's an excellent thing to move forward with.
Thank you. And Mr. Bukola, any last words from you?
Yeah, and I'll make it super brief. I won't go as long as Mr. McGrath did, but I want to extend a heartfelt apology to Ms. Dobes. Maybe in confidence, you can tell people how my wife and I seemed when we spoke. I think he'll tell them we were very down to earth and warm and very, very kind. I'm really bothered that some jerk who was a caretaker said he's too busy, don't call him. Certainly, I can talk to you tomorrow, but you can let people know what we're like, what we seem to be like, and I think you'll be very honest. Scott, thanks for making the nice comments, Hanson. But tell them a little bit about what you perceive to be my integrity, my reputation, that I'm not the kind of guy that says I don't intend to do this when I really do. Mr. McGrath, I will tell you, if Nick Exline and Susie Yanaga are liars, boy, that's news to me. I think if there's something they made a mistake about, that's one thing. But I see them as being very, very ethical. Certainly, they're charging me enough to be lying, but I say that in jest. I think it's a little bit drastic. But Mr. McGrath, call me tomorrow. Let you and I start working on some parameters that would perhaps set your mind at ease on something. So I'm not going to be 5 days or anything like that, but I will give you a lot of assurances about what the intentions are, the limitations. Cars are a scary thing, having lots of on properties. I never want that. It doesn't matter if it's just me and my family or what. But I guess my point is, a number of you mentioned having 15, 18 people in one small dwelling. That still requires a certain number of vehicles if you're concerned about vehicle use. And as am I. So we are going to limit the number of vehicles. Let's work on that. Again, it's going to be a family property, just like my Cascade place. Sadly, you guys, I'm going to tell you all this. You'll probably see us up there using that property 15 days a year, sadly. And it's been my dream to have a home that can accommodate this many people and do this. Now, I do want to tell Mr. Lloyd that he misunderstood something. I didn't mean to suggest that, I was just in shock that people have some objection to this. I was surprised people didn't call. I was naive enough to believe that going to the south from where our property is, to the south, there's another property. And then it's a big 400-foot kind of wide property. And then Meeks Bay Drive, as I see it, starts. So I really didn't think, given how many monstrous homes there are down the start of the street and go straight to the lakeside, and they have 8 feet between the properties next to them, I really didn't think any of those people would care or would consider it to be part. Admittedly, I should have reached out, and I wish I had, to Ms. Dobis, because I think that's a little bit of a different-looking strand along there for sure. But I can tell you guys something. This is not going to be a rental property. Just like Cascade, I had a rental permit last year, didn't rent it a day. And since 2003, I haven't rented it. So, Mr. McGrath, give me a call. Let's talk about it. Let's try to put some stuff in writing. Maybe I can put stuff in a deed going forward that would be helpful. I don't know. But I can tell you, if the property's ever rented, it will be to a fine family that we have background and we know about, not to an excessive number of people, and certainly we'll have more than enough parking to accommodate anybody there, and we'll be there. And if we're not there, until the Hunt is a caretaker, will be there. So if anyone that wants restrictions on speakers and sound outside, I've written it up before. I'll write it up again. Let's do it. Let's all sign it. So you're going to find that we're really, really good neighbors. You're not going to see us very often. It'll be quiet 90% of the time up there. I'm sorry I didn't reach out to some of you. I really, other than Ms. Dobis and some folks along there, I didn't think anyone would really care. And that's on me. So, and I apologize to everybody. As far as some of the vitriolic comments about, boy, what are you trying to prove? Man, I'm a real messed up dude, I guess. But I'm very excited, Bill, to get a couple of families that are close to us together in the home and enjoy that beautiful stretch of Lake Tahoe that's so pristine. And hope to get to know a lot of you. And I think when those of you need favors, I think you're going to find that me and my wife, who's a neurosurgeon, will be the first ones to the plate. And Scott, you tell these people a little bit about what you perceive to be my integrity when I'm not around, if you would. Anyway, thanks very much. I appreciate everyone's input. And I'm so sorry this caused so much consternation.
Thank you, Mr. Bercola. Appreciate your comments. And I would encourage, yes, you and Mr. McGrath and the others to talk to one another. It may not solve everything, but certainly I think open lines of communication are a step in the right direction in this particular situation. All right, one more. Marlon?
Yes, just in regard to the staff report and the permit, just want to make sure this is on the record that pages 1 and 2 of the staff report indicates that there's a 3-car garage and that just needs to be fixed, that there is indeed a 4-car garage. On page 11, which is the permit, it also mistakenly states that there is a 3-car garage when in fact there is a there's 2 garages, 1 3-car garage and 1 1-car garage.
Furthermore, on pages on page four of the staff report, we used the wrong address for the scenic assessment, as been previously stated. And on page 12 of the permit, in condition 3B, there the wrong address is used as well. So that just needs to be fixed.
Any other corrections?
Well, we have a condition for the driveway, should you decide that it should not be widened for that excess slope. So
thank you. Thank you, Lynn. Thank you, Marlon.
I can share that with you right now.
I've read it.
Oh, you read
it? I read it, yes, when you put it in front of me previously. Great. All right, at this point, and I want to thank everyone. Mr. McGrath, we're...
One quick question. I have is the permit conditioned on no parking for construction only or no parking in perpetuity?
It's for construction. We didn't have any, well, there's no TRPA parking ordinance for the general public.
That's not a TRPA matter, Mr. No. McGrath. That's between the local government, the fire district, and the property owners.
Yes.
Mr. McGrath, you drop something up, we'll sign it. I agree. There should not be any parking along there. I totally agree with you.
I believe you're certainly willing and able to petition the county to put no parking signs up in certain stretches of Meeks Bay Avenue, and you're of your own free will to do that. But that's not part of the TRPA's purview.
Yeah. Thank you.
One question. Mr. Bucola and ladies and gentlemen, how do we deal with an intersection that should have a four-way stop sign now?
Yeah.
How do we deal with the danger of the blind curves from every direction? There's a blind curve. And coming up a steep with however many would be the maximum occupancy for the 5 days or 1 day.
There's an easy solution.
We've got to have a solution. We've got to figure out a solution to do that. And I'm not sure where we go.
I think I have a good one. Yeah.
Unless you have a means by which to say that this project requires, with now that you know definitely the intention you're dealing with today, no problem. The subsequent the growth.
Work this out. I've got a great idea. I've got a fix for it.
Is contingent upon getting the lot line adjustment. So in this regard, you have some latitude to say that this is approved, but there must be a traffic study to allow the larger project.
My sense is, Mr. Evans, and thank you for bringing that up, is that the HOA with Mr. Bricola, I believe, would probably be a member of your organization, would want to work with the local government and potentially the fire district. I bring them up from an emergency access standpoint. In Tahoe, in particular, raised great points about fire evacuation and emergency evacuation. Excellent point. We all lived it in this part of the lake last year. And I think the HOA, represented well, obviously, by Mr. McGrath, would be a great to begin those conversations with the local authorities about how we do this and not if we do that. But that, let me remind everyone, that's not part of today's action before the TRPA. But you've made a great point.
Let's start that talk tomorrow, Mr. McGrath. Give me a call. I've got some great ideas. I think you'll like. So thank you, everybody.
You have the leadership here then. Good. Excellent. All right. And with that, I will approve the findings that are contained in the staff summary and the rationale on which they are based. And that does include Chapter 4, Chapter 30, Chapter 37, and Chapter 67. With the corrections noted in the staff report, as made by Marlon, I'm going to mispronounce your last name again, Jarno. And secondly, I will approve the permit as conditioned with the corrections that were also read into the record as part of the staff's wrap-up for us.
Just to be clear, the driveway, are you... adding the extra condition and the findings for the...
I am not. I'm leaving that as is.
So the driveway can go ahead as proposed?
Yes, it can.
Thank you.
As proposed, yes. And I want to thank everybody for their thoughtful participation and input. I appreciate your communication, both written and over the internet. And this was our first hybrid in-person virtual meeting. We'll learn from it. I'm sure we'll figure out some things that work, but it was made so well done by our staff, every one of them. And I want to thank the staff for, including our man, Josh. Josh, come out from the back there, please. He's been in the back the whole time and probably waiting for us. This has worked very well. And thank you very much for coming over to this side of the lake this afternoon to participate. And we'll stand adjourned at this point.